Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routines to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme that our choir don't sing able. We're off to bed in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Awe, 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 awe
nothing happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Tracks deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures
of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beech nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
I would, oh God, yes. Oh, that is gorgeous. Yeah. I need a cup of the brown stuff, the shade of an acorn, made warm by the same source that I take my cakes from. Using a teapot, a mug or fine china, been hooked up to IVs, need constant supplies, and a drip for my urges might verge on perverted, perverted brown tea. I'm certain it's worth it. With Sherpas who work hers and use a fresh fountain, I've discerned brews from Peruvian mountains. I've slurped up a cup from an elephant's trunk with a couple of monks who are utterly stunk. I've had bourbons with sultans and creams with queens, and I've bathed in Earl Grey. I'm really that keen, and missionaries dismiss me for my single epiphany. The dip between him and me is a simple sip of British tea. So when times are hard and life is rough, you can stick the kettle on and find me a cup. Now when I say Earl Grey, you say yes please, Earl Grey.
Yes please,
Earl Grey.
Yes please.
When I say Assam, you say lovely Assam.
Lovely
Assam.
Lovely.
When I say ooh, you say ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh.
Oh, we're gone.
Going on, bro.
Yeah.
I've been around the world in 80 brews to see the place it takes me to make a brew that tastes like the cream cakes made by angels do. I'm not the same as you, get shaky but aim to swig amazing fluids but don't make it the same. Now using fine leaves picked by pretty maidens in a bag knitted by a seamstress who lives in Copenhagen, brewed up in a pot made of semi-precious metal, let the blessed content settle in my very special kettle. Now when I say ooh, you say long. Ooh,
long.
Ooh,
long.
When I say herbal, you say no thanks. Herbal.
No thanks.
Herbal.
No thanks.
No. No, I want milk in it. Strong though. I want to see that spoon stand up.
If you're tired of tea, then you're tired of blood.
I'm madder than a hatter and it fires my mic. Liken me to Earl Grey, a Sam or Ginger. Lapsang, Souchon, raise my pinky finger. Keep your sodding coffee in a proper cup of coffee. Bottoms pop me lobbing, teapot to your Ponzi rotten coffee shop. Coffee clocks nodding off, lost the plot, sodding off. Need some caffeine tannin and a Battenberg to top it off. Cut them off a different cloth, a different lot can take their pay on 80 cups a day. I haven't slept for 80 years. You could say I'm mad for tea or just say I'm mad. Oh, you can't stay any longer. Oh, actually, I'm quite glad. All the more Battenberg for me. I can barely pour. My hands have got a bit shaky from caffeine. Oh, I love it though. I'd sell my own grandma for a cup. Well, I'd sell your grandma.
Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table with old King Shaziz the Terrible, and I've got an echo going on inside there. So, we got Raymond in here, we got Thomas, Muddy, and, doggone it, I forgot your name again.
Justin.
Justin, sorry about that, brother.
He went to go make some tea, he'll be right back. It's his birthday.
It's his birthday, you say?
Yeah, he's 30 now.
Oh, wow, happy birthday. You're getting old, dude. 30. Man, I remember when I was 30, I used to be able to run across the yard without passing out.
I'm 23 times older than he is.
Man.
He is a...
So, any new news in the alternative energy world? Anybody?
Yeah, I've been playing with a dunking bird.
A what?
Dunking bird.
Oh,
yeah, little glass figurine that you buy, put a glass of water by it and hook it on the side, and it goes out and dumps its beak in the water, and it rocks back and forth, dumps its beak in the water.
Yeah, it makes it look like a drinking.
Oh, yeah. The old big drinking bird.
Those are pretty cool. I ain't seen one of those for years.
The cool thing is, Boomer don't do anything small.
So you're making a big one?
About 4 or 5 foot tall.
Wow, that ought to be interesting.
And if it works, then I'm going to try for 1 10 or 12 foot tall.
You know, those things, from what I remember, they stayed going pretty doggone long.
Actually, if you drill it right, it'll work day or night. It just works better in the day.
It'll work as long as you got water right there.
Yep.
So for everybody who don't know what it is we're talking about, you want to explain the concept?
Well, it works on refrigeration and thermodynamics, exactly. I mean, you just get a liquid that has a very low boiling or evaporation point. You have two balls that can be glass, metal, whatever, at the end of each end of a tube. One tube goes all the way to the bottom of the bottom ball or container. The top container, the tube only goes up to the bottom of it. So, and then you fill the bottle with a fluid, and it's best if you draw a vacuum and have nothing but that fluid in there. Therefore, it'll gasify a lot faster. And a little bit of heat, or in fact, it doesn't even have to be heated. You can actually cool the top. All that it works on is a very slow temperature change, and the pressure builds up in the bottom container because it cannot get out because the tube is going down into the liquid. Well, it pushes down on the liquid, causing it to go up the tube into the top container. And then, whenever you fasten the pivot point off the tube, determines the balance point, so it's when the top gets heavier than the bottom, then it rocks over. Well, you have a glass bucket or another container with water in it, put a little bit of felt on the top container, and preferably white or silver colored felt. The top container dips into the water, absorbs some of the water, and at that point, the tube in the bottom container comes out of the liquid. The expanded gases flow up the tube, and the liquid in the top container flows down, making the bottom heavy again, so it rocks down, and as it rocks back and forth and builds up heat in the bottom, the top is cooled by the evaporation of the water in the felt on the top one, and it just keeps rocking back and forth. That's why, if you have the felt and the water, it will work even at night. It doesn't need sunlight. It doesn't need heat at the bottom.
That sounds pretty cool. So you're going to do a video on this one?
Yeah, oh heck yeah, if I get it running. Yeah. But it's real super easy to build. In fact, once you build one and get your the actual volume of liquid that you need, the size of the containers right, that way, to build them over and over again exactly the same size, it's so simple. In fact, it's just about the simplest type of heat engine you can possibly build that does have power to it, and is capable of using it to make electricity. And like I say, it works day and night because the evaporating water causes the top to get cooler than the bottom no matter what the temperature at night is.
I can't wait to see it. Those birds, do those work by whenever they, the same process, but whenever they actually dip their beak in the water, was that the cooling portion of it that would cause it to evaporate back, or what?
Absolutely, that is it right there.
And well, actually, the cooling is while it's rocking back and forth.
Well, yeah, the water.
The evaporation of the water on there.
Right, the evaporation of the water, and it works like an evaporative cooling system. As the water moves back and forth in the belt, it causes the temperature change. Well, therefore, the temperature at the bottom is higher. So, they're really fantastic once you get into making some of them. I've made a few small ones, but I will try the big one.
It's fascinating what you can learn from toys, man.
You know why it's only like 5 or 6 foot tall?
Why?
Because I told Boomer, don't build it 2 stories high this time.
Yeah, my legs won't hold me going up a ladder that high. Yeah, that's the only reason. He's just looking out for my safety.
But to think about that, Neil, there, you know, do you think it would have enough power to, like, pump water?
Oh, it would pump water, make electricity, drive nails, whatever you wanted.
Drive nails.
That's yeah, you can put a saw blade on and cut wood with it if you built it big enough, strong enough. His power is only limited by the size and the amount of fluid, the weight that you put in it.
I'm pretty fascinated with that because I never gave that one a thought with that little bird that rocked back and forth. Those are pretty neat. When year did those come out? Do you remember?
Oh, probably day back in that. I think it was back in the 30s.
I was farther back than that. Yeah, I guess it was the 70s.
Well, the cons,
I remember I was a little kid then.
That was back in the 1760s. But the actual commercial production of making them and selling them as a toy or a novelty item was back in the early 30s, 1930s.
See, now they had a lot of cool toys back in the day that did a lot of good stuff. I mean, there was a lot of science involved in those toys. You know, I talked about the pop-pop boat that they used to have. Some called them putt-putt boats or pop-pop boats. A little steam diaphragm that makes the little boat go around with a birthday candle. But I still believe that thing could be scaled up. I had it priced for having some tubing bended, but it was like $1,500 for one or $8,500 for 10 of them or something like that. It was quite a chunk of change, so that still hasn't got done yet. And I might have to try to bend it myself using some maybe an inch and a quarter copper tubing or something like that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Shaziz, if you'll take that copper tubing and fill it up with salt or play sand or something like that, and then start bending it, you don't get as many kinks in it.
Yeah. But either way, I wouldn't want to use copper because after you heat copper up, you know, you might get some copper oxide in the water or something like that. You know, if you get it too hot, and it'll be polluting the pond or anything like that. But I was thinking stainless steel would be the best go for that deal.
You know, actually, copper worked great. Aluminum worked a little pretty good too. But there again, this you're talking about boiling water at sea level pressure or higher if you're in an elevation in a lake or a pond is higher, so you're never ever going to get the water any hotter than 212 degrees. That's the absolute max. Now if you were up in the mountains in a smaller lake or something like that, then you're talking about 200-205 degrees.
Do you think I would be safe to use copper tubing without causing to build up some copper oxide?
Because the only way you're going to get the copper oxide is get the copper super hot. I mean, copper has a melting point of 1,800 degrees.
Okay, well, I just wanted to make sure because I don't want to, like, design something that's going to kill all the fish off in somebody's pond, but I really seriously believe that it could be scaled up to a full-size version and, if you could get it essentially be a solid state boat motor with no moving parts, you know, that could be very beneficial. You know, I mean, you could burn logs or propane or, you know, whatever for your heat portion of it.
Yeah. That worked great. In fact, Scott and I discussed it up here a few months back about it. Next time we got together, maybe we want to try to build one big enough to push my... I got one of those little square pontoon type bass boats.
Yeah.
Bass boats. And I want to build one and put on it and see if it'll push it around.
I believe it will. You know, I did that one video with one that I scaled up, and I didn't measure anything on there. I mean, it was a total turkey. As a matter of fact, I caught it on fire the first go, and so when I went to put the rest of the stuff back together, I just kind of slathered on the Bondo, didn't sand it or anything, you know, so it wasn't nowhere near precision, and all it had in it was two turns of a copper tubing, and they were kind of slightly at an angle, so there was really wasn't a whole lot of place for steam pockets to build up in it, but that thing still moved. It moved slow, but it moved. And if I'd have had it in a larger container, it could have built up some speed and got going a little bit faster than what it did in the video.
It looked slow because it was big. It still moved right along. I think it was pretty neat looking.
And so, with that said, I know it's possible to build a full-size version, you know? And if you had...
I built the diaphragm version on mine.
If you had 12... turns on a stainless steel tubing or copper tubing for that matter, I would say inch at the very least, and 2 inches probably a good size, and you had 12 turns on them, and they were probably about 12 inches in diameter, you know, something big enough diameter where you can get a log inside there to burn a log or something, because you want to burn the wood inside the tube.
You know, that's I don't know if that would work. I mean, I'm not saying it won't. I'm just questioning whether, you know, the same piece of pipe with more number of turns would work better than individual. In other words, if you took the one you made and then made another one just like it and put it beside it, in other words, a series of them, you could actually control the speed of the boat simply by lifting, say, for example, you had 12 coils, 12 separate engines in the same fire.
Yeah.
And lift two or three out to slow yourself down or put them back in to speed up.
Well, you can always take coils off if it didn't work, you know, but I'm thinking the more steam pockets you have in there, the more pressure you have built up inside that tube.
Right. But now if you put too much heat on it, then you get so much steam out that it doesn't have time to cool and remake the steam. You can't get too much heat on one.
Well, it's, like I said, it's going to be a trial and error thing, but from seeing that little toy boat that I put together out of junk, like I said, I didn't even measure it. My tape measure was a string. And so if it can move that much mass with that little tiny motor that was inside there, you know, and I also I encased the tubing in some melted aluminum. I think it was aluminum. It might have been lead. Yeah, I think it was probably melted lead. Can't remember. But either way, I melted it in that, and so that would retain heat for a longer period of time.
Yeah, okay. That sounds like a good idea, because lead has a melting point of 743 degrees.
Yeah, but it was hot enough for the water to boil into steam, but not so hot that it was going to melt I'm pretty sure it was lead I poured in there.
That's a good idea, Shazette. Like you said, it would hold the heat better, longer.
So.
Yeah. Excellent idea. I got a couple tons of lead around here. I might have to try that.
Yeah, once you got the thing hot, you know, it acted almost like, you know, like a catalytic converter. Once you get those hot, and I know those stay hot for a long time, because a long time ago I was driving down the road and I seen one laying off the side of the road and fell off somebody's car. And I thought I'm going to go pick it up, but I was racing for time, and so I figured, you know, if it's there on the way back, I'll pick it up, because I knew you could get probably $12 out of it down at the scrapyard for the materials inside there. And so 2 hours later, I come back, I reached down to grab a hold of that dang thing, and it was still blazing hot.
Yeah.
I was like, what in the heck?
That last pendulum I made, I melted 103 pounds of lead in the broadax head of it, of the pendulum.
Yeah.
And it almost 24 hours before it cooled down enough so we could handle it with your bare hands.
Yeah. So I was thinking those probably would have been a really good deal for making a really super efficient wood stove if you had like 6 catalytic converters or something like that and run your heat tubing up through there, you know. Once you got those puppies hot, even after you ran out of wood, you know, it was just down to the coals, that thing would still be hot.
Well, you know, a lot of people are afraid of lead because of lead poisoning and this, that, and what they don't understand is lead itself is not poison. In other words, you can handle the heck out of it. It's the white powder from when it oxidizes into a lead oxide. That's what can hurt you because you can breathe that in and get it in your lungs. But and as far as melting lead, there isn't a big danger. I mean, you got to take a little caution with anything. But it's nowhere near as bad as people think it is because they don't think and they don't have the experience. But melting lead melts at 743 degrees. Oil is somewhere around, 2600, maybe 3200 degrees. If you boil the lead, then you got a problem because you're turning it into a gas in the atmosphere. But yeah. Who's going to get that hot? I mean, look, steel melts at 2800. Lead boils at a much higher temperature. So what would you melt? What would you turn the lead into steam in? A crucible. That's the only thing you could possibly put it in. You couldn't put it in a steel container.
Well, at what temperature does water start boiling? About 200 something?
212 degrees at sea level, at your 15 PSI.
Yeah.
Reduce PSI, you reduce the I've got a couple of videos on showing people on my experiments for my cold steam turbine where I'm actually boiling water. I mean a hard, hard, rapid boil at 67 degrees.
Cool.
Now, the whole idea of making the cold steam turbine, keeping the temperature down because temperature takes the strength out of your neodymium magnets, or any magnet actually. And Well, for example, I had a baby food jar just dancing. I mean, it was tap dancing. Fred Astaire couldn't keep up with this sucker.
Yeah.
If you put a magnet on top of the baby food jar and a coil above it, a birthday candle will keep that thing running. So if you bought one of those candles that burns for 5 or 6 days, 24 hours a day out of a yard sale for a dollar, you can make electricity for 5 days straight, 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
That's the point of my experiments with the cold steam turbine.
I think, like I said, those toys from the way back in the days, you know, I can't remember what year they said that Hot Pot boat actually came out, but, you know, heck, they had their first steam engine, I think, was back in, 1700s or something like that?
Yeah, right.
But a lot of those old toys like that, though, they had science to them, you know? Remember the old submarines that you used to put, like, baking soda in and they'd go up and down in the water?
Yes, I had one of those. Yeah, I had several of them actually.
They used to have like little lathes in the shopping malls and stuff like that. All kinds of cool stuff that kids used to have. Now it's just all the same thing: electronics and Pokemon cards and nothing.
I'd like to get a collection of photos of all the old scientific toys and put it on the website for people to check out. So if you guys happen to come across any toys like that have science to them, you know, like the steam diaphragms or, you know, the submarine with the soda in there and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, even the bird that you was talking about earlier, Raymond, I'd like to put like a really pretty substantial collection of all the old antique toys like that really had some science to them.
There's a guy on YouTube that his website is almost dedicated to exactly that. I mean, he's got hundreds of old toys that are, I mean, they're really scientific novelties. I mean, like the Dunking Bird and the Pop-Pop Boat. And the Pop-Pop Boat, really, truly, the only reason they make it to where it pops is for the sound. It doesn't have to make a noise.
Well, do you have a link, or can you find a link to that later or something?
I'll make it a point to do that and post it to you.
That'd be great, because I think that'd be something people would be interested in checking out. You know, like I said, those old toys, if you look back, You were talking about that bird, and as you were telling me about that bird, I can see a lot of potential and energy generation if it was scaled up, because I'm a firm believer. Anything that can be made on a small scale can be scaled up or scaled down. And if you think about that on a larger scale, what did you say, like 4 or 5 feet you were talking about making that thing?
Yeah, at least. At minimum.
That would seem to me would have a lot of down pressure or an up pressure on either side of it, either time. There's two different ways you could collect energy on that.
Several ways. You can either put magnets on the bottom of it or the top of it and have it arc through magnets, or you can actually fast the bicycle wheel to the side of it at the access point, put magnets on the bicycle wheel and coil all the way around that. I mean, there's so many different ways to do it. It's pathetic. And
also, I keep saying this, and I don't know if people realize what it is I'm talking about, but if you take in, I keep talking about using high voltage, and the reason why I'm saying that is because I want to take the high voltage and jump it across the spark gap instead of having like a direct coupling, you know how like you get that cogging effect with electric motors and such?
Yeah.
When it's jumping across that spark gap, it doesn't get that back EMF or that cogging effect. So you could use the high voltage generator portion of it to, you know, more or less freewheel in there without having it slow it down. You see what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir. I see exactly what you're
And you pump that into a capacitor bank, and then you got the power that you need, because those capacitors, like I said, an 800 microfarad capacitor will blow your hand off, man.
Wow.
Have you ever heard some of those being discharged?
We got a
dog barking live on radio. Mark Nancy's on here. How you doing, brother? We ain't heard from you for a while.
That's all right. The chickens and the dogs are going nuts. So I'll mute my mic so you don't have to talk over them, but I'm available for comment anytime you've got a question, and I'll chip in.
Well, it's good to see you. Anyway, we were talking about some alternative energy kind of stuff, some old toys that had some science to them. And Raymond's talking about doing one of the birds that, they kind of tilt back and forth from the temperature difference and all that. And we also was talking about the pop-pop boat and scaling it up and scaling it down. But when we were talking about the high voltage thing again there, Raymond, I hope you understand what it is I'm trying to say there. If you jump it across the spark gap and then into the capacitor bank, you could charge that capacitor bank up rapid enough to get usable energy off the other side. I've done it before.
Okay. I'd like to watch some of those experiments.
But it's good because you won't get that, energy loss that you'd get from that cogging effect from, field coupling back in. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And I was always trying to tell people that also that, on your car, you've got four wheels on your car. If you put four generators directly on the wheels of your car, the moment you put that under a load, you got four brakes on your car.
Yes, sir.
But if you take those same four wheels and you put four high voltage generators on there and you shoot those across the spark gap instead of having them directly coupled back to the deal, now you got four high voltage generators on there that's not going to be affected when that arc goes across.
Huh. That sounds good. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, so the faster you go, the more voltage you're going to produce. And, of course, it's not going to be in the high amps and watts until it actually gets into the capacitor bank itself. And once it's stored in that capacitor bank, depending on how many farad capacitors you use for your bank, and they got some really impressive, they call them boost caps these days. They use them in, them loud stereos that the kids go around doing the doom, doom, doom thing with.
Oh, boom, boom, yeah.
Yeah. But those things are powerful, man. I watched a guy put a battery bank together. He was literally starting a little four-cylinder engine with these doggone things.
Huh.
They're pretty impressive. Look them up. They're called boost caps.
You know, that's the thing that dawned on me a few years ago, and I don't know enough about electronics to get into it, but it's so much easier to make voltage than it is amperage.
Yeah.
Without amperage is nothing, but there again, you're saying that there is a way to use it, and if there is, that is the way to go.
That's why I keep on trying to get money to build me one of them actual flux wind turbines with the super high voltage to them. I tell him, I don't care about any of the watts or amps until I get to a certain point, because all I'm going to do is use that thing to free spin outside and then shoot a high voltage arc down a line and then across to a capacitor bank, because it's not going to be affected. You're not going to bog that generator down. You know how muddy, like whenever you wanted to stop that blade, you'd short those two wires across?
Well, yeah, it stopped now.
Yeah, oh. It stopped like on a dime. But you
what you need is what I've got, a lot of really fine copper wire and a whole lot of very inexpensive magnets.
Well, like I said, if that thing sends a lightning bolt that chases me around the yard and zaps me all over the yard, then I'd be satisfied.
Yeah, we got plans of making a multi-stage with those hard drive magnets.
Yes.
And see, the...
A multi-stage, a compound axial flux alternator.
That'd be awesome.
In other words, you got a disc with magnets. You got your rotor with magnets. You got your coils. Well, coils have two sides. That's the theory or the whole aspect of the dual axial flux alternator is you've got. The coil has two sides, so you use two magnets for each coil and run over both sides. Well, my idea is a magnet has two sides. So why can't you just start off with a magnet, coil, magnet, coil, magnet, coil, magnet, coil, magnet?
Yeah.
And you build it as many stages, or I call it compounding. You compound it as much as you've got the energy to turn it. But if you use an extremely small wire, a lot of magnets, then you're not putting a lot of energy in it to turn it, but you're making an unreal amount of voltage. It would be possible. I'm absolutely positive. I'm 100% sure. With the stuff I've got in my shop now, maybe a little bit more wire, with magnets, I could build an axial flux alternator that would put out 10 to 15,000 volts at 100 RPMs.
Cool.
No problem at all.
Well, see, all you're doing is moving the energy from point A to point B. You can change it up when it gets to the other side. It's just like any frequency, you know. You can tune it up and down.
Exactly.
And so all I want to do is create the high voltage, and where we have problems in the standard generator is that once you put it under load, those electron flows goes back into that generator and creates a second field that starts acting as a brake on the armature, which bogs it down, and so you can only get so much energy out of that. But if you took that same generator, modified it, instead of having the high amps or current flow or whatever, you just had it for just high voltage, strictly high voltage alone. Shot that energy across the spark gap into a capacitor bank, and there you go. You run your load off the capacitor bank. There's no back EMF.
Right.
And if there is somehow or another some sort of coupling back, it would be so minuscule you wouldn't even notice it. I've done this, man. I've actually... From wirelessly on my coils out there in my lab, shot it across to say 800 microfarad capacitor, and man, when I tell you what, when I discharged that, my wife come running because it sounded like something blew up in the lab. She thought I was dead.
I gotta work on that. She is.
Yeah.
I gotta work on that.
And that's why I was talking about the Van de Graaff and the Wimshurst, because those two, if you look at them when they're spinning those things, they're not bogging down or anything. All they're doing is freewheeling in there. One on the Van de Graaff, or the Wimshurst, one wheel's going one way or the other one's going the other way, but you know, just fast as you can crank those, the more high voltage static charge you put up, and that static charge can be captured as well into capacitors.
Yes, yes.
And I think that would be the key. If you could imagine, instead of having a huge battery bank in an electric car, and you had a decent sized capacitor bank with some four high voltage generators shooting across spark gaps into this capacitor bank, man, you'd have a car with some serious power going on, and it would charge fast enough to keep it charged.
That's definitely something to think about.
They got those, like I said, these newer capacitors they got, their charge and discharge rate is like really impressive. The best ones, but the most expensive ones that I've seen so far are those boost caps. So if you ever happen to be out at a flea market and you see some of those capacitors that say boost cap on them, grab them. You'll be satisfied.
Those are all about these actual flux alternators. He can almost off the top of his head, he can tell you how much voltage or amperage you're going to get if you just tell him what size wire, how many turns you're going to make, and how fast you're going to turn it, what size magnets you're going to turn. I guarantee you, Scott can figure out, he can tell you within 5% plus or minus of what it's going to put out.
Well, all I care about is the voltage portion of it. I don't care about any of the other portion of it right now, because I'm not gonna be using it in a conventional sense until I get to a certain point in the game there. You know, once I've charged up the capacitor bank, that's going to be where I draw my load from.
Okay. That would work great with the Savonius wind turbine, because it turns at such a low rate of speed, but it has high torque for its speed. And so long as with no load at all, with good bearings, will turn at about 15 RPM in a 2 mile-an-hour wind.
Cool. Well, there's a lot of potential in that, in this, if it does what I'm talking about. Now, I'm 100% positive it's exactly like that. I mean, if you wanted to put like little charging systems on bicycles or whatever, you know, get that thing spinning around, charge them caps up, and then bam, you know, that you got power.
Yeah, I like that. I could work on that one.
Anyway, what else we got? Do you know of any other toys out there in the past that had some science on them?
Not right offhand, but there's a lot of them.
Well, if you happen to find a link to that website, sure like to see that.
I'll send it to you.
So, Thomas, what you guys got any ideas on that?
Nothing that you guys haven't already put out there. So.
Oh, okay. Well, what about you, Mark? What you think?
Well, toys that have got science in. I remember what we used to do as kids. It wasn't science. We'd get the old phone generators and hold it in a loop and zap each other for fun. But that wasn't really science.
Well, there were some guys who used to go fishing with them things.
Yeah, that's true. But there are some interesting little toys that I've collected over the years. I've got one, because I'm working on the water. But battery technology, we're going to be incorporating that into a few toys. But we've got little cars you can get, and you just put a drop of water on and they race around for hours. So I haven't seen any, apart from science kits, I haven't seen a lot of science in toys as such, but we're hoping to bring a little bit to the toy industry. So, pop-up boats, they were great, and I used to play with them as kids. And but apart from that, you know, the story I remember the most is Einstein spending a lot of his time, especially when he's in coffee shops and that, redesigning the pop gun. That was one of his favorite pastimes during one phase of his life.
Yeah, those were pretty cool. That car you were talking about, was that the one that had the magnesium and carbon battery in it?
Yeah, it had a little bit of magnesium and a little bit of carbon and a little collector. He's put a few drops of water, and I've actually got one in the room here. But, yeah, they were, you know, they're too expensive for what they were. It was easy to build your own. And they're based on using a little bit of salt water you drop in there.
But, what I saw was pretty impressive. That little thing was scooting around.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, go for hours. We're running, I'm running lights here, you know, just on a single stick of magnesium for 1,000 hours, and radios for months on end. So we're hoping you get, when you talk about toys, one of the things that really annoys me of toys is batteries. I mean, you know, the worst thing you can do for, sorry about the dogs, if you can give to, I live in a province here, and there's dogs and chickens even at night.
That's no biggie.
I'm in the jungle here. But one of the interesting things and really annoying, either give a friend's kid a noise toy so it makes a lot of noise and then you leave the party and they've got to live with it, or you give them something that sucks a lot of batteries. And batteries can cost you a freaking fortune if you've got kids who have toys with a whole lot of batteries.
Oh, yeah. Especially the batteries that they put out these days. You know, they used to have some really good...
rechargeables that keeps up with. So, yeah, no, you're right, they're good. So the technology we've been working hard developing, and we had it developing on several fronts. And, you know, we hope, we've been talking to some toy people already. Our first product's coming out of lighting and radio and emergency and third world lighting, but there will be a whole lot of other spin-offs. And toys one, because our main theme that we've tried to adopt is no more batteries. I want to get rid of batteries in the world because...
Here's an idea to run across to you on your car, your toy car idea.
And they're also bad philanthropy. Yeah, go for it.
Well, I was just thinking, I was just talking about the high voltage on, and I was also talking about how things could be scaled up and scaled down. If you had maybe two electric motors inside this little car, and one of the electric motors was connected to a little micro high voltage generator that when you fired this thing up, it would start charging up a cap that would run the second motor. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's worthwhile giving it a go. But that's worthwhile trying, and you can adopt a lot of science across. You know, you can even build little toy hydrogen powered cars just by... There's some products out there at the moment they use for recharging cell phones that take hydrogen cartridges, the little fuel cells, really. And those sorts of technologies, I think, are going to start appearing more and more in everyday life and in toys. But I know what you're talking about there. You could build a system, but you can also get some pretty good generators that are also motors. You know, all motors and generators to get the right generation. Toyota, for instance, they've opted in a lot of their hybrid products now. I'm not talking about, you know, their mainstays, but a lot of their new cars under development are all caps. You know, they've gone the cap pass for a boost and using electric motors with a charge for some of the latest hybrids, because the caps, you know, you never have to replace them, for one thing. And two, you're right, you can generate a whole lot of collective energy very, very quickly, and more importantly, unlike a battery with capacitors, you can release it very, very quickly.
Yep.
So it's a good way of thinking. I was reading today how they're about to double the capacity of capacitors using some new gels and new graphene formulas. So capacitors are certainly in the next 2 or 3 years going to double, triple, or even quadruple in the energy they can store. And the cost of manufacturing is going to crumble as well, just like lithium-ion batteries are just, you know, the first Tesla cars, they're paying $800 to $1,000 per kilowatt hour. I'm not sure exactly what the price they're paying, but they're paying $180 per kilowatt hour. It's just getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and they say within another 2 or 3 years they'll break the $100 barrier. So energy is going to get very, very inexpensive to store. And capacitors are certainly going to have a big thing to play in that in the future.
Nice.
So, yeah.
I also think, and I don't know how plausible it is because I don't know exactly how expensive germanium is, but germanium has a really good, it picks up radiant energy, it picks up radio waves. It's not really specific to any frequency. You could actually get these doggone capacitors if you was to build some sort of coil or grid system around the casing of the thing and then feed it into that capacitor. You could get that thing to charge itself sitting on the shelf.
Yeah. I think the most common use for the 1N34A crystal diodes or germanium diodes is as a crystal detector, the same, you know, crystal radios. You can tune, you don't have to go with the amount of turns and the size of the coil that that they normally show you. You can actually go a little bit smaller and a shorter coil and pick up CB radio as well.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. There's radio frequencies everywhere.
Unless the guy's next to you. Say again, I'm sorry.
I said, that's what I'm saying. There's radio frequencies everywhere. You might as well, you know, grab some of that out of the air while you're around it.
Yeah. I'm not too sure how they are at the real high frequencies. I haven't studied that. It's not limitless. No semiconductor is.
Well, I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing for sure. I'm going to find out pretty soon because I got 200 of them coming from Russia.
Oh, by the way, Boomer, I found that 100 crystal diodes I was looking for before.
Really?
Yeah, the ones I thought was lost. They were in my old goldsmith kit. I stuck with something I didn't want to lose, so I knew I wouldn't.
Dang, we were there a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I blame my wife. Because while I was up there doing your solar panels, she decided to clean my side of the room.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I figured, there they went.
I did a little video a long time ago. I think it was called Simple Circuit, and it was just a little coil of wire, and it had a capacitor on there and one germanium diode. And you could sit there and watch this thing charge up, and if you went certain areas around the yard, you know, you could get it to charge up faster, you know. Now, keep in mind, it was down in the millivolt range, but it would charge up to, it's coming around a little over a half a volt. And so I know that it's possible to do, you know, pick up radiant energy out of the air. You know, you'd have to obviously be in a hot spot where there's a lot of radio signals, and depending on how many turns you had on that coil of wire would depend on what frequency range it was in. But that's why I was talking about that germanium, because for some reason it's a lot more sensitive that way.
I've seen some of these you talk about science toys. I remember these Stirling engine cars and steam cars too. My goodness, yeah, they basically just turn their front wheels and put the fire under them and let them go. And they aren't real fast. Probably about as fast as one of those little wind-up mice that you get the cat to chase.
Chrysler came out with a steam car that run over 35 miles an hour, man.
Right. GM actually worked on a Stirling engine car and had it all set for production, but they figured the warm-up time wouldn't make the sales go, so they didn't put it out to the public.
That was the same thing with the steam car, the warm-up time. That wasn't that.
Oh. Well, they had to turn the key and go.
They had a turbine the size of your wrist.
Wow.
The scientist who designed it, developed it, he worked for a rather large corporation, General Electric, and back in the 80s, they actually had this turbine, right? They're driving around the streets in it, and it was the size of your wrist. That was it. So, yeah, the size of your fist. And that was powering one of your big yank tanks, as I call them. So, there's a lot of technology there, and a lot of the technologies, they're developing new ones, but some are making a comeback. They're really, really pushing the envelope now with the new cars that they're developing and the new technologies, and they're going back to revisit some of those. But this was a turbine engine, and I'm not kidding you, it wasn't putting out hundreds of horsepower, it was only a test engine,
but it was putting out sufficient horsepower to drive it around the town normally.
See, if it's got enough power to drive a person around, then that should have enough power to turn a generator head.
Oh, yeah.
This is 60 to 70 horsepower at least. It's just the size of your wrist. But the materials, the secret of all these is the materials technology behind it. So a lot of the keys that I'm finding or unraveling or the technologies that are really making the breakthroughs, whether it's batteries, capacitors, or turbines or engines, it's down in the materials technology. So and even materials that are absorbing, like you mentioned, there's quite a few products under development now powering small devices that do draw on the EMF and the radio, all the wasted RF and everything else they can scavenge. So a lot of it's getting down to the real technology is actually in the materials technology, and more science papers I read and more research, there's billions of dollars a year being spent just on battery and capacitor technology at the moment. And we run that little site Revolution Green with Keenan that, and nearly every second story I come across nowadays is a materials technology. And I certainly know, like the project I'm now, we develop electronics. We've got the most efficient DC-DC converter in the world. It took a long time to develop, but we're very happy with it. We got a lot of other founding technologies, very efficient LEDs and all that. But all of them, when I go back to the roots of them, like even the LEDs, it's all down to materials technology. So to me, the real big breakthroughs in the future are going to stem from materials technology. And that's just my opinion, of course, but...
I agree with you.
DC converter, what was the efficiency on that?
92, depending on the computer, depending on what we're matching it up with, but typically on your flashlights and that, most of the cheaper end DC converters, you get anywhere between 30 and 60%, some are 70%. We're up in the 80s for most of our applications, depending what voltage you're applying to it. We ran some tests the other days and we're getting 89 to 92%, which is pretty damn high for a very, very small DC-DC converter.
That's so really efficient.
I've never seen anything like it. The most I've ever seen or tested was about 70, but it makes a big difference. Like, you know, we've got an energy source. Whereas a normal battery or capacitor, you can draw a lot of power instantly, short them out, do what you like. With the technology we're using, we have 10 times more storage or 100 times more storage. One of our sticks is equivalent to 100 batteries, size of a couple of AA cells, and is equivalent to 100 AAs, but we can only access the energy at a certain rate. You know, that's the trade-off, so we can have energy stored 100 times of a normal battery safely, but we can only access it at a slow rate. But because we're accessing at a slow rate, we have to get the maximum efficiency to apply it to the products we want to reduce the size of the other components we need. So working on a very efficient, and I did do the work, is actually developed by a very, very good scientist, engineer, a good friend of mine in the US. But it was just really important that we were able to get this, and hopefully not just our product range, we'll be able to pass that technology on to a whole lot of other people with low energy products. But anyway, I'm going to get off my soapbox here. Sorry, mate.
I'm impressed with the LED technology these days, but LEDs are amazing. I mean, you can use them, you can actually charge cell phones up, make a little charger by holding it up in the sunlight. But I also like the fact that you can energize these things without a whole lot of, you know, amperage or stuff like that. I did a video here a while back where I lit it up, just holding it up there next in the general vicinity of the coils that I was energizing. Now, keep in mind, I'm using 12 volts to energize that deal, but still, if you wanted a really efficient lighting system, you can light them things up with high voltage. I mean, straight down one side of the wire out the other, and they're bright.
I just finished this. The LED technology, typical lumens, which is a light output or lux per watt, you know, if you use in the earlier ones of 60 or 70, the ones we're using at the moment are about 130 lumens or lux per watt. But, you know, it's just insane the brightness we're getting now with such little energy, and the things are just getting better and better and better. It's just amazing. Sorry, I'm up for questions.
Well, I know they're also good for picking up radiant energy as well, because I've hooked a voltmeter up to a strand of those things and was able to get that voltmeter up there pretty good.
I was basically wondering if I remember a few years ago they say that the LEDs were putting off close to some of the LEDs were putting close to the same efficiency as fluorescent lights, but I'm not sure if the LEDs have surpassed that by now.
Yes, they have.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's gotten pretty high up there.
I have to agree with that. They're well past it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think if I remember correctly, the last measure I saw on that, as far as how far they had gone, was something like almost 30% higher than the difference between the fluorescent and the incandescent bulb. So, as far as you know, the fluorescent bulb being better than the incandescent. So, it's not as large of a percentage as it sounds, but it's still, you know.
Yeah, with the LEDs, like I fit in my house here, I'm buying them 1, 2, and 3 watt LEDs, and the 3 watts are too bright. We're running 1 and 2 watt LED lamps around the house.
I remember the small incandescent lights, the 7 watters, they were like 8 or 9 lumens per watt. And you get up to like 45 watts, they were somewhere around 30 or 40 lumens per watt. And when you got up into the fluorescent or the compact, the CFLs, they were doing close to about 90-something lumens per watt. The LEDs, I think, were doing 60 and 70 lumens per watt back when I checked.
I'd be interested to see inside of one of those LED compact LEDs to see what kind of transformer they got inside there, whether it's a step-up transformer, a high voltage, or what.
Most of the LEDs I've been looking at, 10, 20, and 30-watt range, they're running between 50 volts and 12 volts. So, and they put out, like, you know, you can put out something like 1,000 lumens for like 10 watts, 2,000 lumens for 20 watts, because they're using an array of the lower wattage LEDs together. The lower the wattage, the more efficient it is. When you start getting into a single LED that basically puts out like uses three or four watts, you're not getting as many lumens per LED.
You're 100% correct. We've tested that theory on a whole range of LEDs, and the actual figure the LEDs are running now is 132 lumens per watt, which takes them up above everything else. And they're getting better. And these are cheap. These are 12 cents each, which is amazing. It's so inexpensive, and they last so long. And the products we're developing, like the third world, you know, there's 1.6 billion people without electric lighting. They're using kerosene. They're burning 20 billion litres of kerosene a year. It costs them a fortune, especially in the third world. They're slaves to the oil companies. It costs them up to 20-30% of their income for kerosene. So we've come up with the solar lights are good. We've come up with an alternative that would be a fraction of that. And, you know, it's really important to get these efficiencies of the DC-DC converters, to get the LED efficiencies, and to use all the available technologies that are out there and incorporate them to find solutions. The other problem we got in the third world, 600 million phones can't get charged in the household that has them, and they rely on them for safety, communications, education in some cases, and they have to pay exorbitant fees or go find somewhere they can charge their phones. We used to collect them on island hopping and take them back to the mainland, but it's just 20 kilometres from where I live now, the people have got absolutely no electricity. In fact, about a third of my neighbourhood don't have electricity. So it's important that these efficiencies are there and we can find new ways to apply the existing technologies and the new technologies to find the solutions. up my soapbox now.
It may take just a hair bit longer, but you could make special adapters and have them cell phones be charged with LEDs. I've charged capacitors with them.
No, we're charging using our technology light. You'll be able to buy a flashlight or a camping lantern or a room light that will charge your cell phone. The products are bringing out, you know, the flashlights will run 500 to 1,000 hours just with a bit of water and a little bit of metal, and they'll have the ability to charge a cell phone many, many times over. So that's what we're approaching to do. There is some good solar technology out there now, and renewables, I'm pleased to say, are really taking a hold by where Kultus lived in that state there the other day. I read a report. They had a whole day where the population was running off renewables, wind and solar, and they were exporting the fossil fuel to the generated electricity to the neighbouring state. So things are changing fast.
Cool.
Yeah, that's why they've been trying to basically push everywhere to add tax to collecting sunlight. add a tax to collecting wind, you know.
Yeah, they're assholes, sorry. We know that I swear on this show, but that's the fight. That's the current fight you got to win now, because renewables, you know, solar's got panels are getting cheaper and cheaper, the inverters are getting cheaper. Even here I can go to the retail shop and buy a solar panel at 80 cents a watt, you know, which is unheard of 5 years ago. I think that's still about $3 a watt. Solar is cheaper than the grid. The trouble is with everything is storage. You mentioned transport before cars. You mentioned to get off the grid and be 100% free of the grid. You've got to have good storage, and at the moment the battery storage and the other storage options are just outside the economical bandwidth. Now within 2 or 3 years it will be actually cheaper to go and build a new home or get a house and actually put your own storage and solar system in to actually connect to the grid in many cases. You'd be mad not to, but we're still about 2-3 years away of reaching that threshold. I think Citibank said $230 per kilowatt hour is the storage rate. I think they're about right, but I think I can see it within 2-3 years being down to $100-$120 a kilowatt hour storage. Once you've got that, electric cars are going to be cheaper than normal gasoline guzzlers to buy, even with the batteries. And once you reach that...
Yeah, which is basically why they signed a law into effect over in California to do this massive test run of tax per mile, because they know they're going to collect that money off the gas pump soon. Yeah.
Definitely taxes. You've got to be sure of those two things.
I was going to say, you can't tax sun if you don't have some way of, you know, finding out how much sun you're using, you know.
But what's going to be the punishment? They're going to put a big umbrella up over your roof or something, you know, if you don't pay your tax.
No, they'll put a big umbrella over your head called prison system. Oh, you didn't pay your taxes? Here, go to jail, you know. We got a big room called a rape room that's, you know, just waiting for you.
They're going to start taxing oxygen you breathe.
Spaceballs, anyone? Can't get there?
Who gave these guys the authority to tax nature? That's what I want to know. I'm not going to ask for permission.
The Yahoos that basically wanted something for nothing. First, it was, it's a cycle. First, it's big business that wants something for nothing. Then it's, you know, welfare state wants something for nothing. Then the middle class wants something for nothing. And they keep turning everybody against everybody else, you know?
You're correct. 100% correct.
Well, on one hand, they holler about the doggone supposed global warming. And then on the other hand, they try to screw you over for trying to capture wind or solar or even water power, for that matter.
But they're just getting you to help support the system that everybody else is dependent on.
But they ain't fixed global warming yet. They're still complaining about it.
Well, never mind. The old system basically should have been, you know, upgraded or, you know, left behind a long time ago, but they keep putting that money in their pocket instead of putting it into the system and, you know, repairing them.
I know how to beat them. You take a couple of mile and run a Stirling engine off it.
No, I think the way to beat them is just stop playing their game, get out of their system, leave them behind.
I got a better way. In Lewisville, Texas, there's a city ordinance, building code ordinance, that says that you cannot use wind power by any means for the generation of usable electricity or mechanical energy. And yet, they use it every day. I think what we need to do is find the cities that pass stupid laws like that and arrest them and fine them for doing exactly what they passed a law against. Now, think, for example, the wind blows free, right? Okay, in front of the courtyard are several trees. In the hot summertime, these trees evaporate water, but when the wind blows, it evaporates water so fast the air comes down out of the trees, this cold air, and people use the shade for air conditioning. Duh, the city is in violation of their own law. They need to cut down all the trees.
Don't forget the radio towers, Boomer.
Oh, don't give them no ideas. They will go cut those trees down because they want a monopoly on that, too.
Does anybody beside me find it ludicrous how these guys function? I mean, this is representation? When's
it? Electrical power, metal telephone pole, every day going what within the city limits, have they got a ground wire to it, because if they don't ground it, you walk within 20 feet of it, and it's going to put your dink in your watch pocket. Yep. I mean, so they ground that they're making the electricity from the friction of the air blowing on. So there again, the city and the power company is in violation of this particular law that they passed. I mean, it's ludicrous to pass a law.
We just need to put together a community that we can actually pass our own laws, build our own governmental system, make it completely upside down compared to the way things are now, and make the community extremely profitable. And I mean, with the advent of the internet, it'll be impossible to shush that up. They'll have the whole world up and screaming and jumping up and down, we want the same thing here, we don't care that you guys are losing a bunch of money because you're busy pocketing money and you won't be able to do it anymore, you're going to change things or else we're going to storm the castle.
I can see passing a law against wind turbines, but not against wind turbines, but against shoddy built wind turbines that endanger the safety of your neighbors. That's the law they should have passed, but no, they said you just can't, period.
Well,
horizontal access turbines, they just said any means. In other words, if you just put a pole in the air and let the wind blow on it, like Yusha says, collect the static electricity off of it, you're in violation of the law.
Man.
Think about that.
There is another solution. I took it, move out of America.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Any silly laws. The 10 years behind with silly laws like that over here. I mean, I in Australia, they're looking at, if you disconnect from the electrical grid, they're going to tax you for that. They're going to make you pay anyway for being near it. So that's the new tax they thought of. Over here in Asia, which I love, it's sort of a bit like the old days of Wild Wild West. There's so many freedoms because they haven't got stupid laws like that. And they're actually, like I was looking at doing some biodiesel the other day, they actually got 6-7 years tax exemption if you start making biodiesel, whereas in Australia, I don't know about the states, they tax you for it. And there's no taxes on solar, there's no taxes on this, there's no taxes on that.
On that, you mentioned America, what they actually did was they gave everybody a bunch of grant money and whatnot to develop the biodiesel, and then they turned around and didn't tell them that they were supposed to be paying taxes on it, and turned around and fined them and imprisoned them afterwards.
Man.
You're kidding.
Nope. Not at all.
Actually, I'm trying to sell sell formulas for it. Biodiesel to make it is ridiculous. They show oil burns great in a diesel engine without converting it. Just pure vegetable oil. The only problem you got is up north in the wintertime. That is not a problem. You just build a gas tank or a fuel tank accordingly. You run your exhaust system through it with a thermostat and a bypass.
It's not the point of basically getting the fuel to basically burn once you got the engine running. The problem with the biodiesel up north is getting started. You need something to warm it up first to get it going.
Exactly. So you start your diesel engine on diesel fuel, you run it 20 minutes or less, you heat up your tank of vegetable oil, and switch it over.
Or you just get a hold of Muddy and have him set up a compost to keep in there.
Yeah, we had a deal in Virginia. People were starting to make biodiesel and going by McDonald's, getting the used French fry grease and stuff like that. And so they decided to jump on the wagon too and say, okay, well, they have to, if you're McDonald's or whatever, you have to give it to them, and they take it down to Norfolk or Virginia Beach, and they had a biodiesel plant down there to take care of it, and then they're going to add it and sell it to us.
Hey, you want to hear something really ridiculous that they do in Virginia? Actually, Virginia is the last communist state left in the United States. I mean, they tax their people to death. They actually, years ago, spent over $5 billion building a, we call it anaerobics gas plant, taking city sewage, turning it into methane gas, spent money building, buying pumps and pressurizing, converted all of the city vehicles over to burn natural gas. They ran it for 2 or 3 years and then shut the plant down. They were saving millions, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars in just fuel. They used the excuse that the natural gas was so corrosive that their upkeep on the plant was too high. Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. All you radio listeners, natural gas is corrosive. All of the gas pipes in your major cities up until the past 10 years ago when they came up with a plastic black iron pipe, and they were underground for 40 and 50 years. What happened to all the corrosive? That was an excuse. Somebody, somewhere had a son, daughter, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, uncle, aunt, brother, somebody that was in the fuel business, and he needed to upgrade his amount of money he was making, and they passed a law and shut the damn gold plant down. That's all it was. Nepotism. Corruption. Money.
Well, they'd already gotten all the money they could out of it for the build. Now, you know, they just need to go ahead and basically let it run long enough for that politician to get reelected and then shut it down so they can start another scheme to make money.
Exactly. That's all it was, a scheme to make money. And I just put something on my Facebook page the other day, and it says, we need to go green. Let's recycle Congress.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
Man, I'll tell you what. Hey.
I'm telling you, man, transparency.
The rabbit hole goes deep, cameras.
Yeah, there's no problem with all the cameras we got, except the direction they're pointed in. They need to be turned back around on the people in power. I mean, think about it. One guy can get out there and, you know, with a gun or a couple bombs or whatever, do a little bit of damage. And it seems like a lot to us because, you know, we've got the empathy. But if you think about it, the people that are in power can actually, you know, activate hundreds and thousands of people with bombs and guns and tanks and all kinds of stuff like that. So they're the ones that are the most dangerous. They're the ones that need to be watched 100% of the time. They're the ones that need to be on the Truman Show.
Well, they talk about how they care about children, but yet they're still droning, you know, people on the other side of the world. And if children are in the way, then they call it collateral damage.
Oh, yeah, they care about children when they're getting votes.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, and this makes me mad because I see these commercials on TV with starving babies all the time. And this really frustrates the heck out of me because it's still going on today. It don't take no 30 years to feed people, man. And with all the technology we got now, there ain't no reason why we can't, instead of going over there bombing the crap out of somebody, go over there and put some gardens in and some water filtration systems, electricity and everything. You know, it's all about what you guys were talking about earlier. It's about the dollar, man. Who's got the power? You know, the guy with the gold.
But what the tax alone, 80% of what they collect on a charity, they can keep non-taxable.
What's ridiculous?
The other 20%, basically goes to middlemen until the starving children only wind up with 2 to 3%.
First off, they don't have that much, Scott, because the thing is, we have hundreds of volunteer doctors and nurses that go over to these countries where people are starving to death and to help treat them for disease and malnutrition and all, and almost every one of them quit before their volunteer time is up because they are fighting a losing battle. You send a shipload of food over there, and it gets put in warehouses, and they use it as political leverage over the people. The people don't even see the food. They have got camps where people are starving to death by the thousands daily, and across the street are warehouses and warehouses and warehouses full of food, blankets, medicine, and everything, and the people cannot get it because the government will not give it to them. They use it as a leverage. That's why, as much as I hate to see children go hungry, I will not give a charity so much as 10 cents to feed children.
It depends on the country, but that is correct in some African countries, and it saddens me. But I feed quite a few kids here. We take up rice to some areas. I sponsor 10 school children who get to school every day at the moment as well. Now, I found what we're finding the best thing to do, and I've certainly been doing that. Like recently, I bought about 12, 15 horsepower engine for a boat up in this lake district, not up in the mountains near me. And they couldn't afford one for about 12 years, but now they've got the motor in their boat. They're catching fish, and they're feeding everybody in the district, and they're also selling the surplus and buying other food. And we're still taking supplementary rice and that up there. But I found the best way is, you're right, you can't always trust governments, you can't always trust charities. I see a lot of good, the ones who you least think would do the good job are actually doing the good job, and the high profile ones aren't. But what I found was, for the way I best to do it, is I actually got in and got my hands dirty. And a lot of my friends here, the expats, you get your hands dirty. I know a lot of expatriate Americans here and Australians and many other nationalities. And there's an Australian down the road here, that every Friday, it's Feed the Kids. He just feeds a big pile of kids and gets money from Australia. So I found direct intervention was the best way to go. And work with the locals, work with the people who know. Because it does happen. It does get held up in Africa. It does get used for political purposes. There's corruption. You know, government officials take it and sell it and hike the price of it. There's all sorts of bad things happen. But the best thing is to find the people who are on the ground. And you do a bit of homework and a little bit of internet searching and that. Find the people who are actually on the ground and go and support them directly. And they're the ones who will spend 100%, probably 110% of the money that's sent to them. As I said, it costs me a fair whack of our income to support these kids and support the things. But we're giving them the skills. We're giving them the tools to help themselves. You've got whole generations lost in Africa now. If you give them the farmlands and the water and the irrigation and the seeds, they don't know how to farm anymore because they've been on the receiving end of handouts for 20, 30 years. So you've actually got to give them the tools and the skills to help themselves. And they're the people I encourage everybody to support. Sorry, on my soapbox again there, boys, but I'll shut up. But I do it every day. I work with these people.
There are a few countries out there where people get the food sent to them, but not many, especially, like you said, Mark, over in Africa. The food that is given to them, the government takes it and uses it as political leverage over the people.
I agree with you. I've got no argument with you. It does happen. That's why when I'm over here, I get, like I said, personally involved, and we can't buy the rice, we take it. The other thing that amazes me at times over here, I found humanity, is when there is a disaster, they just get on with it and do it. Everybody just goes and
your country tells them, you either give the people, we give you the food free to give to the people. Now you either give it to them, give it to the people, or give it back, or we're going to just kill the government. But screw them.
Well, they're not giving them training how to support themselves. I guess that's my point there. What I'm finding is rather than spend $1,000 on so many bags of rice I give them for 12 months, buying that motor has made them self-sustainable. They can buy their own rice now with the surplus fish, plus feed quite a few people because they can now go fishing again. So often it's about giving them the tools, also more importantly, giving them the training about how they can support themselves, because a lot of these countries for generations in those countries have lost the ability and the training of how to support themselves, how to grow food, how to even farm. It's a skill set lost over a generation. It's really, really sad. I haven't got the answers. I really haven't. I'm not telling you what to do. But it's tough.
I know it would be illegal, but would it be immoral to set up a hit squad?
Well, the NSA is going to be telling you.
And shoot the heads of the government that are holding back the food from the people that it's given to for free.
Well, I'll see how it is that we can amass armies to go over there and bomb the crud out of somebody instead of amassing armies to go over there and hand deliver whatever's needed to these individuals. It's almost as if these folks up there, it's out of sight, out of mind. If it doesn't affect me, I don't care. You know, granted, here in the United States, we have people starving here, and that shouldn't even be the case. There shouldn't even be anybody homeless over here. You know, it's ridiculous.
You don't need a military to go over there and hand out food to people that we've already given people for free that can't get it because of government. You need one man and one 180 grain of green bullet in the leader's head. And you do that, somebody else steps up, well, if he did, I'm taking leadership, so you kill him.
Well, we can't advocate violence. We can't advocate violence, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, but I do see your frustration that when we send it over there, it should get to the intended party. I would say, you know, it's going to be like I said a million times. It's going to be the average Joe walking over there giving that homeless man a sandwich, a shirt, a blanket, and, you know, something. Because you're not going to get any representation. And anytime you put a third party in between there, now you got other issues to contend with as opposed to just walking over there handing it to the individual.
All right, I've got to go to bed, fellas, but I just want to leave you this thought. Why is there homelessness and why is there hunger in America still?
Because of greed?
I'm just wondering. It's a good question, I think, because I flew into Colorado, down to Colorado one Christmas Eve to see some friends of that, and they had a car pick me up at the airport. We're driving through a park and it was snowing and late at night, and I said, oh, there's a gathering here, is there Christmas carols or something? And they said, have a closer look. It was the homeless, not a few, it was hundreds. And I'm thinking, wow. And I saw the same in Salt Lake City, you know, often 40, 50 homeless people just steps away from, you know, the Ritzy restaurant district. And my question that puzzled me, I'm not critical of America, I love Americans, I love the country, I love everything, but it troubled me that why? What's gone wrong? Why is this so? And I haven't got an answer. I wish I did because I could fix it. Well, but it just troubled me.
The answer is as simple as the doggone representation regulating these people not only out of jobs but out of homes and allowing banks to do the things that they do. Like during that housing bubble, I know because I was one of the guys that ended up losing my house over that deal. And essentially, the banks got bailed out. They got to keep. They still got to foreclose on the house, and they got paid twice and resold the house.
Yep.
And if there's not something wrong in that entire scenario, I'm baffled. You know, this is why these people are homeless. You know, you got to have a car to get a job. You got to have a phone. You got to have a residence. If you ain't got one of the two, if you don't have a car, nobody wants to hire you because they don't want it. Want to be able to, you know, expect you to show up at work and you can't make it there. And if you ain't got a mailing address or a residence, you know, that's another thing. They make it so hard for these individuals to get. You know, once a person falls through the cracks over here, it's almost impossible to get back up. You know, they got shelters.
If you don't have somebody up above the cracks pull you back out, it's pretty hopeless. And there's a point whenever you're out like that, you watch these people when they're out, everybody's like, oh, being homeless just makes them more motivated to get back on their feet. Well, no, only for a short period of time. Eventually the depression sets in from, you know, what they're going through, and then they just give up.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, was that once they get to a certain point, you know, it's almost easier to be homeless than go and try to contend with everything you got to pay. What, you know, once you get an apartment, now you got rent, you got electricity bill you got to pay, and all these other different things that if you're just walking around living under a bridge, then, you know, some folks get to a point where that's comfortable to them, and it's sad.
Yep.
All right, fellas, I have to go to bed because we're going to be up early in the morning. It's pretty late at night here. So thanks for your time, and it's always a pleasure. And I loved hearing about your opinions and all your projects you're working on. It's always exciting. So I'll sign off from this part of the world and catch you guys next time. Cheers,
all right,
fellas.
Take care, Mark. It's always good to see you.
Yep.
Cheers, fellas. Who else just joined us?
Carlos Corona.
How's it going, Carlos?
It's going good. How are you?
Oh, real good. Watch the bleep words.
Oh, I will.
So, have you been listening in?
I just got in here.
All right, well, we're talking about a whole lot of stuff. So where were we, guys? Anybody going once? Don't everybody jump at the mic at once. Wouldn't want nobody chipping too.
The corruption of the government and all that kind of good stuff on our power and taxing people for using solar and.
Well, that to me is ridiculous, man. You know, the whole carbon tax to me, that one never makes me madder than everything under the sun, man. That going to tax you to breathe. That's what that is, you know. You breathe out.
Oh, yeah, they had that guy that literally thought he was going to get by with saying that, you know, they should carbon tax people who basically ride bicycles because they're pedaling harder and therefore they're breathing more air and putting out more carbon dioxide. And then he had to try to play it off like it was a joke later because he got caught.
Well, you know what? If the EPA is already putting it out that CO2 is a, what do you call it, a waste product, environmental hazard or something. I heard the story about maybe a year or so back. And either way, basically they're saying that CO2 is pollution, so that means every living creature out there is polluting. You know, anybody who breathes air. So if you ain't a plant, you're breaking the law.
Yeah, you know, they used to make jokes about, yeah, the next thing they'll do is be taxing us on the air we breathe. Well, no, they're taxing you on the carbon you emit when you breathe. Okay. That's okay, I guess.
Well, you know, the volcanoes around the world spitting out carbon and carbon dioxide or monoxide. I mean,
nothing.
Did you know that there's over 25 active volcanoes 24 hours a day throughout the world, and any five of them spew out more carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide in one 24-hour period than all the United States in all the efforts saved in the past 10 years?
Now, you recall that they were complaining about all the cows and all the methane they were putting out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cows are only responsible for about 12% of the methane that's put out in the atmosphere. The other, like 80% of it is coming from those volcanoes.
I did a video called Caveman Killed the Dinosaur. Go look at that. That explained the whole cow and the methane thing.
They'd be charging countries that eat beans.
Yeah. But, heck, man, look at the doggone volcanoes. There's some thermal heat right there. There's no reason. We don't have an energy crisis. All we got is stupidity.
Man. Yeah. And you got 25 to 30 of them worldwide going off 24 hours a day, gone day.
Yeah. So we could gather up thermal energy from all the volcanoes of the world. We could gather up static energy from all the electric, the lightning bolts flashing everywhere. We could get energy from the dirt, energy from the air, energy from the sky. And this is why I get so frustrated at everyone who tells me about the so-called global warming. We're all going to die, the polar bears are going to drown, so on and so forth, and Planet X is going to hit you in your eye. If you ain't looking, man. Come on.
All of the money that they collected from them people flying in the air, you know, riding in airplanes,
the little $5 donation you give every time you get on a plane. If you and if you don't, they frown on you. All of that disappeared. Nobody knows where it went.
Yeah, Al Gore out there. Al Gore, I hope you're listening in, you jive turkey. Look at here, man. If you're going to get on a corporate jet while waving at me and telling me you don't forget to reduce your carbon footprint, man, I want to pack his parachute for him in case of emergency.
Wasn't person that was put in charge of something to do with the ecology and stuff? And for a year and a half, every weekend she flew from Washington, D.C. to Florida, to California and back on a Boeing 747, and she was the only passenger?
Well, see, there you go. And Al Gore, he said the sea levels was going to rise. Then goes out and buys a 9-bedroom mansion on the seashore with a pretty good size carbon footprint, outside of the fact that he still rides around and corporate limousines, and his family owns a zinc mine that pollutes the doggone river nearby. He's green. Yeah, he's got a lot of green. Big old fat wallet, him and his stupid book. He needs to jump off that stack of books he's got. Crazy man. I'm just saying, man, we need to go back to yesterday's show when we were talking about getting a doggone tube sock and the bar of soap to chase Al Gore around.
With the politicians up there passing laws and voting on laws, they have no idea of what it is they're doing. None. They have no technical experience, no common sense experience, no nothing. And yet they're passing laws about science and they know nothing about science. I guarantee you, not one. Could pass an 8th-grade science test.
Well, I'll tell you one thing's for sure. I may never be able to be a congressman, but get me up in front of them congressmen to teach them a class for a while, and I'll give them a what for, I guarantee you that.
Now, what we need to do is replace all of Congress with strictly volunteers. No pay.
I'll volunteer.
You could do a whole lot better just by making them all minimum wage, but only if, because remember, they're spending more money than they get paid to be in those office positions, to get into that office position, which means there's something fishy going on.
Yeah.
So we need cameras in every single room of every single building that they're in. We need microphones, and we need the same thing. And basically, anywhere they go, there needs to be some way of recording their voice and their actions all the time, and dump it all out where the public can get straight to it.
Well, hey, you know, Google's
$1 million campaigning for a job that pays less than $500,000 a year, and a job's only going to last 4 years.
Listen, guys, Google has basically came out and laughed because they pretty much said that we gave them permission to spy on us, which 99.9% of all the individuals out there did. But they also have a nifty gizmo they call Google Glass. We could, like, put these glasses on all the congressmen and senators. Of course, there's probably some things we just wouldn't want to see, but...
you can always fast forward past it, man.
Yeah, hey, skip that part.
if it's recorded already and saved, then you can always go back through it too. That way, in case everybody's snoozing whenever something bad is going on that they need to be called out on, we can always go back and review it. Somebody can catch it and, you know, spread the word.
Well, look,
the other thing to be implemented is we need an online, you know, a verifiable system where you they know exactly who you are when you're voting, where you can actually go in and vote immediately if you see something screwy going on, and get these people, get these turkeys, you know, out of there.
Yeah, instead of having to wait 4 years to get them out of office, throw them out the same day. You know, like back in the old days, they used to run them out on a rail, you know.
And if they're doing something illegal, they don't just get thrown out, they go straight to jail.
You know?
They're literally, like, you know, pouring their Cheerios and milk, and, you know, the SWAT team kicks the door in because they've been voted out of office, and they've also, you know, been impeached, so then grabs them and throws them in prison until they get their trial, you know.
Thomas, I'm surprised at you, man. You can always trust your government, brother. Really?
They threw me out of town on a rail. Government officials run them out on a rail. They had a little bit of heart. they did give him a free suit to travel with. It was called Tar and Feathers.
Yeah, there you go. See, I'd like to see a lot of them in tar and feathers. I'd definitely like to see Al Gore tar and feather because he's a proponent out there. Earth and the Balance is his book, man. Don't read it. If you do, I don't know. Come on, man. If we're going to save the doggone planet, why are we still talking about alternative energy? And I'll tell you why we're still talking about alternative energy. Because the electric company's got its hands around our throat. And the poor folks out there. And then the BO comes on there and says, under my plan, the electric bills will necessarily skyrocket. You can open a coal fire plant, but you're going to go bankrupt. And he's putting all these coal miners out of business and they're losing their homes and all this. You know, if you don't like coal and if you don't like the way it burns, and build a reburner, have that stuff burning perfectly clean, and it can be done. I mean, come on.
That can be done. Yes, you're right.
Well, and the more CO2 you put out, the more plants are going to basically develop to consume it.
Yeah, there you go.
So
here's
the natural balance of nature.
For those of you who are so worried about global warming and CO2, you go down your local road and see how many times during the summertime you've got tractors out there mowing that grass, because them weeds and plants over there, they're eating high on the hog. They take that carbon monoxide that comes out of the tailpipe of your car, scrub off the carbon through a process called photosynthesis, turn it back into sugar, and that's their food. So they're fat catting by the road. If I was a weed, I want to live next to the road.
Well, there's an area, too, down in Texas, if you look, that, like, a massive, you know, I mean, we're talking, I don't remember exactly what it's called, but all their mud, it is, like, pitch black whenever the rain hits it. And that's primarily because it's full of carbon that's been sequestered by plants.
Well, you know something, man? I'll tell you what. This world is nuts. This world is upside down. It's going to take the average Joe to turn it right side up. That's all there is to it.
Every revolution starts with one man with a vision.
Yep. Maybe I have a dream.
It starts with a vision, you know?
Well, if there's enough of us out there who have a dream, then they can't shoot us all. That's all I can say about that. They might take me out first because it's the squeakiest wheel that gets the grease, so I'm probably going to get greased first, but I ain't shutting up. Now, King Shaziz the Terrible has spoken, NSA.
I see the main problem is for, like I said, they're going to charge you for breathing. The more we let things go, the more we let things happen, the stronger they become. And then they can get, they can pay certain people to say, okay, well, yeah, they're right and this and that, and this is the deal. And just like everything else they passed that was bad for us.
Well, why?
These smart meters, these smart meters they put in, putting off gigahertz in frequency, and a decent in most of the world, they say that you can have just so much electromagnetic radiation in the air that'll be safe, and they all seem to go over it just a little bit. But here in the United States, oh man, it looks like the Empire State Building compared to a shed. Yeah, they're really kicking it out there. And these smart meters, you know, people are getting brain cancer. Matter of fact, Mario next door, he built his house a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, and they put that meter on the telephone pole right up next to the house where it's basically 1 foot away from his head when he goes to sleep, and he's had all sorts of headaches for the last 2 years. Nina's having problems as well. I mean, they're spending most of their money in medical right now, and these smart meters have got to go, man. Thomas says his place where they're at, the whole town doesn't have it.
Well, I didn't say the whole town. I said a lot of people basically got up in arms about it, and they rejected most of them out of here.
Well, one of the things that shocked me about that documentary were people kicking in people's doors in order to put these things in. You know, that's breaking and entering as far as I'm concerned.
Not as far as you're concerned, dude. That's breaking and entering plain and simple according to anybody's rules. Unless they're a thief.
Well, why weren't they arrested? You know, that's what I'm saying. Why weren't they out in jailhouse?
The cool thing is that it has been tested and proven in the court of law that they are a health hazard, and anybody who doesn't want them can ask to have them removed. Although
at the company's expense,
where the electric company tries to tell them, well, we'll just cut your electricity. But they can't do that. Basically, you can threaten to take them to court. It might take a while, but it's well worth it.
Well, that's the thing about the whole power company. You know, they already got my goat a long time ago. That's why I'm on this alternative energy kick, you know, because I know electricity is free, and there ain't no doubt in my mind. And I'm going to prove it, you know, one way or another.
One important thing, too, about the electric company you keep going on about, it's not an electric company, okay? It's an oil company.
Right.
It all has its roots back in the oil industry.
All right, well, they're all part of the same beast, but either way, they're ripping people off, man. You know?
Mm-hmm. And they had Obama, they got him on camera saying, you know, he says, well, if things go the way according to my plan, the cap and trade industry will pass and go through, and electric bills will skyrocket.
Yeah, he did.
Yep. And he was smiling.
Because he's a Muslim and he wants to ruin the United States. That will ruin us.
See, he's got money. He's got a lot of money because he took probably a lot of bribes and all that kind of jazz, too. But all these guys up here, if you notice something about it, you don't never see no poor man in Congress or the Senate. If they were poor when they got there, they ain't when they left, and they're all so corrupt as well.
That's the point I tried to make a minute ago when I said, a human being in their right mind would spend $350 million campaigning for a job that only lasts 4 years and pays less than $500,000 a year. Obama did, so did the president before him, and the president before him, they didn't spend quite that much. In fact, Obama spent more than any president we've ever had in the United States, but there again, every president we get spends more than the last one.
Yeah, well, and there's a lot of other stuff going on about that scene, too, is they're not only spending their money, they're spending everybody else's money, plus they're spending our tax money in order to do a lot of this stuff. Every time he goes to one of these so-called fundraisers for the Democrat Party, he's got a corporate jet. He's got a jet that he flies around in, Secret Service. That's thousands and thousands of dollars every time he gets on one of those planes and flies over there, you know?
You mean millions of dollars?
Millions of dollars.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
What about like we were talking a while ago? So they want to hold an upper hand above the people and use the boot as a controlling factor. So they start their little war in a money war in a way that basically we supply the money for it.
Well, when's
so we'll say it's tax money that's basically used to pay for the Treasury to print that money before they hand it over to the Federal Reserve.
When's the we going to get wise? That's what I want to know. That's the big question. When is the we going to get wise?
Well, we got to take them smart moves out before they make more money off us that way. They want to make us weak. If you go back, if you go back to the days of Moses, and the Egyptians started out numbering, and they worked every day. They were strong. They were healthy. And they worked hard. Well, they said, well, gosh, man, we got to do something because they're multiplying too fast. So they start giving them less food, work them longer hours, and want more bricks per hour, but they want to do it with no straw, which really didn't make no sense there either, right? It was the main deal to weaken them and dumbing them down. And that's pretty much what you see around you in your food, in the smart meters, and invade your privacy. You search on the web, and they're looking at everything that you're looking at. On top of that, they're looking through your camera when you think you got it all. They got facial recognition. They understand what mood you're in. They look at where your eyes are looking on the screen, and they're taking all this and selling that information as leads.
Well, Muddy, one of the keys,
advertisers.
One of the keys that you said is probably one of the biggest keys is dumbing them down, because they're not teaching real science to kids in school. There's kids graduating from high school that can't even read. How are you going to get a job if you can't fill out a job application? You're going to go up there and tell the employer, I need you to read my application to me and write my answers down because I can't read and write? You know, this is crazy.
Somebody's got to do the poo-poo work. And they say everything that you're buying now has a little transmitter in it that transmits to that smart meter. It says, okay, they're using their microwave now. The hot water's running. They're on the computer. Oh, the refrigerator just kicked on. Oh, they're using a foot massager. Oh, my goodness.
How long till
it turns on in your house is going to report to that smart meter, so they have even more to sell to advertise.
How long till they decide when your refrigerator's been on too long and remotely shut it off?
Yeah, they can. They'll shut your car off. That's part of what that OnStar was all about.
Shazam, you were talking about high school kids that couldn't read and write.
Yeah.
They did a survey 5 years ago at Miami Beach University, or not Miami Beach, but Miami University, Florida State University. 30% of the second year college students could not spell Miami University, Miami State University.
Man.
50% of them could not put their finger on the Atlantic Ocean on a globe without names on it. 50% of them could not put their finger on the Atlantic Ocean, and all I had to do was look out the east window of the building, and they had no idea where it was. I mean, they're not teaching our kids anything in school.
Well, this is really a disturbing trend, because as far as we're concerned, we're the last generation that has any doggone knowledges that is anything of any substantial measure. I mean, I was taught real science in school. Of course, I've been out of school since 83. So, you know, what they taught kids in school nowadays, some of them don't even know who the president is, man.
I want to see all these political people go on that show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yeah.
Well, anytime somebody's sitting up there in Congress and they're talking about global warming and they're sitting there spewing out this propaganda, and I'm sitting there, I've been going crazy about this, literally crazy about this, since I first heard it come on TV. I remember I was a kid when it came on TV. And when I heard the science, I knew it was wrong from the get-go. CO2 isn't nothing more than two oxygen atoms connected to one carbon atom, which makes it heavier than oxygen. 10,000 feet is the highest you can go without supplemental oxygen. And so with that said, how is CO2 magically making it up there where oxygen can't go? If there was enough CO2 from the ground to the 10,000 feet level, we'd already be dead. Period.
Trying to control global warming would be the exact same thing as trying to control the depth of your water in the shallow end of your swimming pool by dipping water out of the deep end and walking down and pouring it in the shallow end.
Yeah.
You have success on global warming. Global warming is a natural occurring thing. Happens every 5 to 15,000 years. Well, they're not going to stop it.
All I can say is somebody at the top is making a whole lot of money. There's a lot of t-shirts sold, Save the Planet. You know, there's a lot of money being made in the whole debacle, and it just drives me insane.
If every human being on the face of this earth dropped dead at this very moment, you would still have global warming, and it would occur when it's supposed to, and you couldn't stop it, and they can't stop it, and not being here is not going to stop it.
Well, overfishing, polluting, and killing the whales, and cutting down rainforests and stuff like that, I can see there's a plausible problem there. You know, you kill off species, they never come back, that kind of deal. And so being a good caretaker of all the land and the animals would be a wise thing, because if you pollute your fish bowl, it's obvious you're not going to be feeling so well. So with that said, you know, there are real concerns in the environmental portion of the deal. But when it comes down to stuff like, you know, now you got to tax somebody to breathe, while at the same point you got a law out there that says you can't collect sunlight without paying taxes, something's really wrong with that picture.
Well, you know, to me, really and truly, talking about global warming, the ecology, and this, it's interesting and I enjoy it. But to me, and I may be wrong, but I doubt it, the biggest single threat to this world, not us, not the United States, not Australia, not Canada, not Mexico, not France, the entire world, the biggest single disaster that's going to really hurt us and hurt us bad, fresh drinking water.
Yep, that's the next war.
Yeah, but see, I'm not even worried about that, because over there in Dubai, they don't have, they built their own islands, they got huge desalination plants, and they have no problem with fresh water whatsoever. If there is a fresh water war, which I believe there probably will be, because now you're buying a bottle of water for $1, that's higher than gasoline. If there is a war over fresh water, it was a man-made deal in order to get funds and more power. You know, you control the food, you control the people. Control the water, you control the people. You don't sell no bullets, guns, and ammunition or whatever if there ain't no wars, and you can't sell no drugs if people ain't sick. These guys out there, not just the government, we don't even have a government anymore. It's corporate goons running the whole show. That's all there is to it. But these guys up at the top, they know how to make money by keeping everyone at the bottom stupid and in fear, and they're loving every minute of it. I mean, these guys are eating caviar while you're eating a butter sandwich, you know, if you got lucky enough to get the butter.
I've tasted caviar. Trust me, I'd rather have the butter sandwich.
Yeah, I agree with you. But
beans and some cornbread, and I'm happy.
Yeah. See, there you go. But that's what we need to do, though. We need to actually go up there and give the Congress and the Senate a taste of real life. This is what we eat, you know. This is our food. And here you guys got companies out there like Monsanto trying to taint our food that we're buying. Yeah,
you've hurt Monsanto quite a bit by steering away from the GMOs, but the thing is, they're closer internodial links, so they really don't care. They're mainly interested in selling the seeds, and then the government's got these $1.2 million. If you're a organic farmer or something, man, they're going to take you down one legality at a time. And if you want to save seeds, you have to have $1.2 million to build this facility for each kind of seed that you're going to save for next year. And nobody can plant the same seeds every year.
Well, to me it's sickening, because the farmers used to have heritage seeds that were passed on down from probably generation to generation that they not only could use to barter with for other things that they needed, you know, but they could have it for backup for planting the year after that, and they could actually make a living. If you go out and talk to some of these farmers, and I live in a farm community, so I know these guys are struggling, and some of them are, you know, large farming communities that have thousands of acres that they farm, but the fuel costs are killing them, the taxes and the regulations are killing them. And you know, here's somebody who should be really profitable because they're farming, they work hard, that are struggling just to get by, you know? And it's sickening. We should take care of our farmers.
Yeah, and they're one of the keystones to civilization, too. I mean, food, clothing, and shelter are the three primary things you have to have. Without them, basically, you die from exposure or from starvation, you know?
Yep.
Carlos, you want to interject anywhere?
You still there, Carlos? Oh, maybe he's got his mic off.
I think he's looking hooked off here or something.
Anyway, I think that in the order of our military veterans, our elderly, and our farmers, those should be the first ones that we should be taking care of, because they all paved the way for us to be here right now, and that would, to me, would be just the right thing to do, you know. But do you see it? Elderly yes. get shoved off into an old folks' home. The veterans get ignored, and the promises made to them get backed off or delayed or whatever.
I'm gonna say I'm less worried about the elderly who are put in old folks' home and more worried about the ones who are basically living on the street eating cat food every day.
Well, yeah, that's yep. bad there too. See,
no one even cares at all, you know.
How you could do your fellow human like that, I have no idea. You know, there's not one person sitting at this table right here that would, you know, walk by and not try to help somebody out that was in need. And I think the majority of all the people out there in the world are. Why are we letting little knuckleheads that go up there and run our governments that can't even solve something as simple as homelessness, you know? You don't throw a guy in jail because he don't have a house.
Yeah, that's just it though. They can't solve anything because the only tool they have in their box is a gun, and you don't solve problems with violence; you make them worse.
Yeah, stick a gun in somebody's face. Please buy my product.
Exactly.
The uppermost problem with the federal government of the United States, the problem, is not so much the congressman as it is the voter. Today we have more people that vote for a living than we have working people that work for a living that vote. If the working people that don't vote would get off their lazy butt and go vote, we could get so many crooks out of Congress.
Well, I don't know if that's going to happen because all you have to replace them are more crooks. Like I said, we've got to salt and sour the honey pot. You're attracting all these psychopaths by giving them all this power to basically go wild and tear up everything the way they're doing.
We need to stop voting for lawyers and start voting for the common, ordinary working man.
That's why I started the faces that I started on the Temporal Reserve. Scientists in politics instead of putting lawyers and businessmen and warmongers in there.
Well, one of the things that I see that needs to be done is that the mainstream media needs to be held accountable for the stuff. They actually made it where they can say whatever they want pretty much on there, you know. They can lie to you on there. They can create stories or whatever. And they're not held accountable.
And if anything is too much for them to be able to use to put out there in public media, then they just go ahead and put it up on their little blogs and journals and whatnot and claim that it's not really journalism. It's, you know, whatever, like I said, a blog, you know, somebody's opinion. We can say whatever we want now.
If any one of us was to go shout fire in a crowded theater and cause somebody to get hurt, we'd be in jail. These guys shout fire on a daily basis. You know, the Ebola thing, you know. Here you are talking about the supposed Ebola when they're bringing these guys in who have it. Now, that's not quarantine when you move them from one country to another. You know, put them in a population.
Or move them around from one area to another in the country.
Yeah, and then send them down, send 2,000 troops down into the infected area to combat. These are military guys. What are they doing down there combating? If you need some contractors...
You answered your own question on that. What happens to that food we send over to other countries? It ends up in those warehouses and whatnot being used for political power. What would happen if we send a whole bunch of Ebola-based medicine and medical staff and whatnot over there?
Probably the same thing.
If we don't send somebody to protect them, that's what the troops are there for. So if those... people in power decide to try to pull anything, and that's why they're sending so many and not just sending a few.
Yeah, but they said that those folks, were there to build buildings for medical deals. That's all they were there for. They were there to construct.
They got to say what they got to say, but you know, the point is, they're basically, trust me, these people are afraid of what's going on with Ebola too, because they don't want it here. And the fastest way to stop it from coming here is to quell it where it's at, make it go completely away.
Well, you got the borders are wide open on both ends, and you are shipping the Ebola in every time you know somebody's coming from an infected area, and you bring them in into a hospital where they may or may not be following protocols. If Ebola is real, they're just making it worse. You know, if you...
Well, I can guarantee you Ebola is real.
Standing from the outside looking in, I would say that either one of two things has to be happening. Either it's being done intentionally, or they are just so incredibly stupid that they should not even be in power.
I would go for the latter on that. I mean, we have a lot of people in power that basically should never have been even allowed to operate a tricycle, let alone a, you know, multi-million person country, you know.
Well, here we are. We're talking about maybe a apocalyptic style plague, you know, coming into the country, and it's not just Ebola. There's other things coming in the country, you know. Now, I ain't got no problem. I ain't got no problem with people immigrating, because the United States is made up of immigrants. What I do have a problem is come through the door instead of underneath or over the fence, you know.
Well, the guy that died down in Dallas did come in through the door.
Well, yeah,
he told them. That's the thing, though. He went to the hospital. He told them he was sick. He told them where he'd been. He told them what he thought was going on, and they said, "Nah, it can't be that. You're fine. Go home."
They sent him home. Yep.
Yep. 8 days he was out, basically infecting people he was in contact with. And if he hadn't been being responsible, it wouldn't be like two or, you know, right now I think their count is like 200 people they're worried about because of him, the nurses, the two nurses that got sick, and all the people that those people have been in contact with who have been in contact with other people. It wouldn't be 200 people. Half of Dallas would be sick right now. With it.
You got to pay it forward, man. Pay it forward. Share your disease with three, who will share it with another three.
That's what I'm saying. If he had been out just running around, you know, doing whatever instead of trying to basically, you know, maintain it from getting out and everybody else getting sick, even with them telling him that it was fine, that he didn't have anything to worry about, half of Dallas would basically be sick with it right now. And I can guarantee you, if that happened, it would spread all over the nation because there are people coming and going from Dallas all the time between Dallas International Airport. And all those roads wandering back and forth all across the country, yeah. We would have a mess.
I think Ebola was designed to wipe out about 80 to 90% of the world's population and start over again.
I don't think Ebola was, but I can guarantee you this strain is 3%, they've already admitted is 3% different than the Zaire virus, even though they keep calling it the Zaire virus. You know what... what is only like 1.5% different from a human being?
What's that?
Genetically, a chimpanzee is 98.5% the same as a human being.
What?
So that means that for it to be 3% and be that massive of a difference in such a short time, if it were the same size genome as a human genome, mind you, there would have to be some serious tinkering going on for that to happen, because it's beyond astronomical the amount of the potential that would change. So somebody has probably weaponized this, and I would not even hesitate to go expect somebody to send some money and some weapons and whatnot and go kick the doors in of Monsanto and Bayer and make sure that they weren't the ones behind it.
I didn't want to repeat this because I'm not sure if it's just gossip or not, but I was sent an email the other day along with a URL to a website to prove the fact that it is the United States government that owns the patent to Ebola?
CDC.
Yes, they do.
Well, I was going to say, this is the other thing a lot of people aren't getting. When you say 3% difference between one Ebola virus and another, you have to understand that the amount of genetic material that's in an Ebola virus is more than if you were to string up hundreds of people's genetic code back to back.
Well, the question is, why do you need a patent on a disease?
Yes.
Exactly. That's my question right there.
The only reason why you'd have a patent on anything is if you intended on making some money off of it. What if I copyright your patent, are you going to sue me?
Hell yeah.
Well, I was going to say, they're already talking about using this is the thing, okay, if they've got a patent on that, you realize that that's basically an ancient... So, everything else that's out there, every other disease that we know of that's out there, the code is written up in there, because Ebola is basically as long of a genetic code as it is, because it's been assimilating other codes as it goes along.
That's what that was my next thing I was going to bring up, is the fact that it could mutate on its own.
But it doesn't even have to. It literally takes in new genetic code and becomes something new just from something externally adding to its collective.
Well,
mutation is something that happens from within, for no supposed apparent reason.
Maybe
some radiation knocks them loose.
Somebody stands to make some money off of it. You know, somebody stands to sell a vaccine or two or three or possibly a billion, you know. So, sell them the drug.
Right, listen, though, that says one thing, though, about the people who are saying that it was basically engineered to wipe all the people out. You can't make money if there's nobody to buy.
Got a point there.
That's what I'm saying. You make them sick, you sell them the deal. It's kind of like those doggone virus programs out there. They'll put a little fake virus on your computer, and you see this little deal pop up and say your computer's infected, click here, and go there, and they charge you $40 to fix something that they already put on there, and they knew it was not going to hurt your computer.
Yeah, they give you a program to get rid of the program that they wrote.
Yeah.
Or it will hurt your computer if you don't give them the $40, so that way you'll serve as a warning post to everyone else who doesn't want to give them their $40.
Stick a gun in my face. Hey, you buy my product? Heck no, I ain't buying your product. Go ahead and shoot.
So I just wipe the hard drive and start over.
It's like breaking a man's arm and then try to set him a splint.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of like that toothbrush salesman. I think we all know that. Want to buy a toothbrush?
We got some free chips and dip. Oh, yeah? That tastes like crap. Yeah, it is. You want to buy a toothbrush?
Oh, man. See, I'll tell you what, man. There's some lack of common sense going on. It's getting scary. It's a global thing, man.
Yeah, it is.
And so, you know, hopefully we're talking enough common sense where people will start paying attention whenever they do things, you know, like just something as simple as downloading software, you know. Do you agree to the terms of service? You might be giving away your firstborn, you know.
Gotta read that stuff.
Better read it. You better read the warning labels. The toothpaste on there says it's called the doggone poison control if you swallow it, so that ought to be something. That ought to be a warning flag. Hey, wait a second. Should I be putting this in my kid's mouth?
No, you've been taking it personally.
For anybody out there who downloads a lot of programs and things and stuff like that, when it says express install or recommended, go for the don't go for that. Go for the optional.
Yeah, walk it step by step and read carefully, because whatever they're saying, like Google says it all the time. And that guy was laughing, especially in that documentary. Oh, yeah, you told us we could, you know. It's all right, we spy on you, but you give us permission. You know?
Yep.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't care if they spy on me. I ain't got nothing to hide. They can look all they want. I'll smile at them. I say hi to the NSA and all those groups out there eavesdropping right now. How y'all doing? You got your donuts all warmed up and everything?
Yeah.
Jive turkeys. Yeah, I said it.
Yeah, there you go. I'm with you. I don't have a daggone thing to hide. Nothing. And if I do, I don't know about it.
Well, it's just, you know, some folks like to have a choice. And a lot of us ain't given a choice. And that's what bothers me. You know, this smart meter deal. You know, this being able to tell whenever you turn things on and off. Even if it's just that. Even if it's just, you know, they can tell what room I'm in by where my toaster is or whatever. I don't know. I don't need them to be looking inside my house. My house is my little sanctuary, my little privacy. You know, what I do out in public, heck, everybody's going to see it anyway. So what do I got to hide there?
Well, so now, let me tell you something. If they want to take pictures of me doing something in my house that they want to make videos of, put it on the internet, let people watch it, charge them, hey, all I want is my cut.
Yeah, well, in the old days, they called that Peeping Tom, and that's illegal.
But if they want to do it, they got my permission, just give me a cut.
Yeah, where's my royalties?
Yeah.
If you're going to have a reality show with old King Shaziz the Terrible's house, then, you know, hey, I want my portion, too.
You got it, Pilgrim.
You know, they're going
to... The Muddy Show, that ought to be interesting.
Yeah. Sitting there eating and watching TV and food dropping down on your t-shirt and everything. Now, that guy's a real redneck there.
Are you going to make me bust up Team Fortress 2 sound panels so I can pull that?
You can always tell a Texan, but you can't tell him much.
That's right. You know it all already.
Also, Texas is full of teenagers.
Man. Hey, did you ever hear you ain't supposed to mess with Texas because everything in Texas is bigger? They'd slap you with one of them giant fly swatters, man.
Yeah.
I don't know about the fly swatters, but I know the ants are pretty hilarious down there.
Well, I know Florida's got some doggone
it's
red ants.
It's the small ones you got to worry about. The big ones we don't worry about.
Scott, tell you about them big electronic fly swatters we got, the one him and I played with one night.
Yeah, they taste good, don't they, Boomer?
Man, they flies, woo! There's a little crunch to them.
Well, I guarantee you, brother, you wouldn't put your tongue on the one that I wired because it's got four extra 500-volt capacitors on that puppy. That thing turns the bugs into dust.
Yeah, that might put holes in your tongue there,
Boomer. All right, free piercing. It sure is. You ought to patent that for tongue piercing.
Interesting fertilization too.
Yeah, could be.
There's our energy crisis solved right there. That industrial strength electric bug zapper. Oh man. So where do we go to from here, guys?
You don't need teeth to whistle then. You know, you just kind of hold your tongue out there near your lips and whistle.
I'm not crazy about changing the subject, but I've got to ask you this question. I meant to ask you before, but we got off on this tangent. When you made that putt-putt engine and put it on that boat, how big was the boat?
It's about 2 feet long, about maybe half a foot wide, and I don't know. I didn't really measure it, but it's pretty good size.
Oh, man, shuckers. I was thinking about putting one on an 8 or 10-foot aluminum John boat.
And I think you can.
Because
if you take and go look at that video that I did, and you'll see that size of that boat and all it's got inside there. I took the bottom out of a beer can, and I put two turns of copper tubing in there, and then I melted lead inside the deal, and then I had my candle up underneath that right there, and it had enough to move that boat around.
And you got a video of it on there?
Yeah, it's on YouTube, man.
Get the URL, because you got a lot of videos to go through. What's the name of it?
I think it's Pop Pop Boat.
Okay, I'll go in there and see if I can find it. If I can't, send me the URL to it.
Complicated titles.
I'm looking now, so you guys keep talking, and I'll go find it.
All right. I want to build one and push a 10-foot aluminum jog boat. If I can do that, then I'm going to build a bigger one and push a 28-foot pontoon boat with 10 people on it.
I honestly believe that this could really be seriously beefed up. If you use some technology such as the catalytic converter to even retain heat, man, and you could use nozzle technology for to steer it and that kind of stuff, I mean, just like they do jet skis, I think you could get one out there in the water that would literally scream, man.
Scott, technical question on the putt-putt engine. To build a big one to push a boat, if you had a solar panel that put out roughly 200 watts, maybe, more or less, and you used a smaller water pump that would pump out, say, 25 to 30 PSI, very small amount of water, don't you think that you could pump water into a chamber, turn it into steam at 20 PSI, which your 25 PSI water pump would put it in there, the steam would manifest into 1,600 times its size and give you a simulated jet engine. And you would burn less energy pumping the water into it than you would get out of the water turning into steam pushing the boat. Am I correct or not?
Yeah, if you can get 32 PSI in there, and basically the steam's going to, like you said, 1,800 times, I think it was. But when it expands and tries to go to that higher pressure, it would have to be done in stages. Therefore, it's not pushing, because it's going to push a lot more power than what that 32 PSI is.
All right, I put the link to that video. It's Pop Pop Boat 2. It's in both of the Shaziz chat room and the Awake chat room and in the Mad Science Skype room.
All right.
And you can see that this thing is definitely not measured out. It's all lopsided. It's got probably about a couple pounds of Bondo on it. And it's just like, I didn't take no pride in painting it. It looks like heck. But you can see it.
The do fixtures is, I love to do them haphazard. Because if you even come close to working, then you have to think, how much better will it work if I refine it?
Yeah, and I believe that if you took the same idea right here, and instead of having one single tube, if you was to run some copper, like some maybe 1/8-inch copper tubing in there, like a bundle of it, up inside that before you actually bent that tube, then you'd have so many different pockets in there. Once that thing got up to temperature, you'd build some serious pressure up in that thing.
Yes, I love it. Love it.
And if you build that motor right there, then all you got to do is whatever you want to burn, propane, hydrogen, or burn a log, or some coal, or some charcoal out of your barbecue grill, or whatever. And there you go, man. You can put the coil inside of a little firebox and keep it insulated away from where it wouldn't be messing with the boat or anything like that, and just stoke it up. No moving parts. Outside, unless you want to put a nozzle system on there to steer instead of having a rudder.
That's an idea.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a cool idea.
You ever play with pop-pop boats here, Justin?
I just got back, but no. I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
You don't know what a pop-pop boat is?
No. Fill me in.
Oh, cool. You could either use a diaphragm one or basically a coil of copper wire, copper tubing, and both ends of it go into the water, and you put the heat to that coil, and what it does is it sits there and it turns it to steam, it flashes out the back end, and then as it cools, it sucks water back up in there for another cycle. By then the coil is hot, and it flashes back and keeps on going in the cycle. So that's why they call it a pop-up boat, because it kind of just goes.
But yeah. I think that this thing could really be super perfected if you was to use, like I said, let's say you had a 2-inch copper tubing, and inside that you had a whole bunch of small 1/8-inch copper tubing in a bundle, and then you made like a catalytic converter around the coil at some points of this deal. Once it got hot, you wouldn't have to have near as much heat to keep it maintained. You could actually use a flapper, or, a shutter kind of thing, like on your stove, your damper, to release some of the heat so that you could actually regulate the speed of it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I see exactly what you're saying.
By raising and lowering the temperature, you'd speed it up and slow it down.
Yep.
I think if you put like a let's look at the rocket stoves where they have to have it insulated, the insulated chimney, to keep it hot so it makes a more of a draw and keeps the air rushing through. If you put a fire in like a double ring and you make your coil, you make it where you've got say 3 pieces of copper tubing, and you wrap them side by side, kind of like what you would do on a Biffler coil. Wrap it side by side in a vertical tube, and fire hit the outside and the inside. And it's insulated, so it creates more of a draw, so basically the oxygen coming in would really superheat it. I bet you can get a lot more out of it.
Well,
I think it would be pretty cool, because one end of the tube's of the three tubes is up higher than the other one. It might make it all kind of directional.
When I encase the tubing in lead, it actually held in that heat a whole lot longer. And so there's other materials you could use to maintain the heat and do exactly what you're talking about, keeping a hotter fire going in there without getting too hot to burn through the metal, but hot enough to flash the water to steam.
Yeah.
So either way, there it is, man. I want to see a full-size version. I hope that I'm the first one to build one, but I gotta be able to get the coil.
I think it's gonna have to be a compound engine. Like you got an 8-cylinder, you got a 12-cylinder. You know, I don't know if anybody made a 16-cylinder yet, but I'm thinking. The pop boat deal. They say when you scale them up, they become less efficient or they don't work.
Yeah, but I don't believe
that.
Scale
them up too high, so just make it compound.
I don't believe that because
you can run a nice heavy flame up an insulated tube. You can have as many as you want.
I don't.
100%, Scott. In fact, they are. The smaller they are, the more efficient they are. So you just build a whole lot of small ones and put them together, and then, like you said, adjust them where you can put 10 or 50 or 200 in the fire at the same time. If you get too fast, take a few out. Just put it, raise them up and down, in and out of the fire.
Well, the point I was talking about...
The fire where you want it and evenly across to all of them.
The point is, I was talking about as far as the efficiency-wise and why I don't believe it is because... If you made it exactly the way it was with just the tubing and you scale that up, sure you're going to lose some efficiency because now you got a larger hole that needs to be heated up. But if you do like what I'm talking about and you add in a core inside that so that it's not just got one tube, there's multiple tubes and that heat transfer is really good through the copper, then you would have more pressure, and so it would be actually more efficient than the smaller version.
Could be.
I'm willing to
make it where when it expands, it goes out a smaller orifice, and when it sucks back in, it comes into a bigger orifice.
I'm willing to stake what's left of my reputation on it.
What's left of your reputation?
One of the tricks to a pop boat that a lot of people overlook is you must have it to where it will cool the steam faster than you can produce the steam.
Well, that's easy because the exhaust tube and intake tube is in the water.
Steven Gibbons in the chat room asked, could an induction coil be used to heat as a heat source? Yeah, Coltus took a copper tubing and he run it around. And he hit that copper tubing on a battery just direct on her, so it's almost like a dead short, but he didn't have enough turns on there. But yeah, he got that thing to instantaneously spit that water out. So induction heating could work. You just have to make sure you do an efficient version of it.
I remember when Cultus used that coffee heater, man. They like to spray him in the face.
Yeah.
He had to jump back pretty quick. You didn't expect it to react that fast.
But either way, there you go, man.
That was a good video. That was one of my favorites of this.
I'm just thinking, you know, there's so many different opportunities coming from that one little tiny toy that they called the pop boat. And with that said, all these other toys, like the bird you were talking about, Raymond, I mean, you know, sometimes to go forward, you need to look back at some of the things that were done in the past, and there's a lot of really cool stuff that, you know, at one part when we got close into the industrial age and people were like inventing things right and left, there were so many things out there. You still can discover things that you never even knew existed. You know?
Yep.
And a lot of it had a lot of good science base to it.
I'd like to make a boat that runs off of neutrinos. That'd be nice. Never have to refuel.
Well, you know, you could actually probably get one to run off of microwaves, man. You can get microwaves to run water hot, you know, and agitated water is going to cause pressure. So if you have a microwave running into a coil system of some sort, and those microwaves are bouncing off the wall in there, shaking the crud out of the water molecules, how much voltage would you have to create a microwave that could heat up the water almost instantaneous, man?
That's a thought.
It just goes on and on, man. There's so many potentials, so many directions you could take it. So I'm saying I want to see a second industrial age kind of revolution where people just go out and start making stuff and trying it out. You know, rediscovering old toys and technology and stuff, man. Because these goons at the top, they already got it figured out. They're making their money. Are you guys making your money?
Not really.
Try to start a doggone business these days. You got so many red flags and things, red tape you got to climb through and hurdles. And you got to go to this guy and that guy and ask for permission to have your own business. And then you have to have insurance on top of all that. And now you got to have health care for any employees. And it just goes on and on. So the average Joe's like, you know, it's just cheaper for me just to go to work, you know?
Yeah.
Where's the freedom in that? It used to be a day, if you want to start a business, you throw your shingle out there, you know, your little business card, and hey, you know, somebody call you up if they want you to work, and if you did a lousy job, they'd tell all their friends not to hire you, and you wouldn't get no more work. That's the way it worked, but, you know, look at it now, man. Now, you got to have a license for everything. And then what you have a license to breed. How many breaths did you take today? You owe me $50. What? I only made 10. Can charge me tax on that, too?
I remember a few years ago, a guy came in, he said, I just want to fill up this little cooler. I don't need a whole bag of ice. I said, well, come on back. And he goes, you know, my wife was working at the store, and there were many customers that came in and got free ice for their day. Went back to the ice machine, and I lifted the door, and he bent over about the same time, and the corner of that door caught him right in the forehead, and it wasn't a dull corner either. And I looked at it, I said, oh, my God, oh, man, I'm so sorry. I didn't know he was fixing the ice. He looked at me, and he smiled. He says, you and I are not the enemy. And he pulled me to him and gave me a big hug. And man, that sunk, it sunk in deep. And it struck me. It struck me to where I remember it about once a week now. I still think about it. The people that you meet and know on the street, just got to remember, they are not the enemy. No more prejudice, no more this, no more that. We need to pull together. We need to do things together. We need to get rid of smart meters together. That's something that is a winning battle that we can do. Everybody out there under the sound of my voice, get rid of your smart meter. That's one of the first steps to protecting your rights, because if you let them go longer, they're going to take that right away from you. And because then they'll find some way of proving that it's not harmful to your health, and you'll have it. And the next thing you know, you'll be like one of them kids that went into college, you know, and within the first year they had brain cancer in the same room. And the next one, so he went to the hospital, and his parents, you know, did everything they could, and the doctors did everything they could, and he died. And by the time that happened, they had another one on the way to the hospital with brain cancer. And there was a whole list of like 9 or 10 in a row from the same stupid room where the doggone cell phone collection tower was closest to, and the smart meter. You know, come on, man. They're going to say, well, it's not dangerous. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And you have that right to get rid of these smart meters. The people around you, your neighbors, tell them, because they are not your enemy. If you want to fight the enemy, this is something you can do without pulling out guns and pulling some kind of crazy revolution.
Yeah, it's not about violence, man. It's about common sense, you know. Why go out and pay a corporation who hasn't got your best interest. It's only the bottom dollar. Why don't you go pay your neighbor to do the same work or whatever, you know, for a better product? You know, go down and buy from your local farmer. You know, there's where it all starts.
Like Justin and Thomas says, stop giving your money to the fools.
Yep.
To the enemy.
You know, and then as far as alternative energy, there's so many different methods by which you can gather up energy. It's just crazy. You know, we've been sat there and told time and time, and I make a lot of people mad, you know. And when I talk about the electricians and stuff like that, I make them mad. And it's not intentionally to make them mad. I just want people to start thinking for themselves outside the box, outside the book. You know, the book, they've been telling us all these years that a lot of things can't be done. And then when a toy comes by that shows you, wait a second, this kind of looks like it could be done. What if you added this to that? Could you get it to do even more? And that's what I'm talking about, the whole thinking outside the box thing, you know.
There's a million and one simple things you can figure out that's an invention, like the weed eater, man. Who thought of cutting grass with a string? You know? And you say, oh man.
Well, somebody made a lot of money off those little tips that you put around the end of your shoestrings to keep them from fraying out. And a toothpick,
right,
man. They're selling sticks. And you're buying them. If you got teeth left.
Somebody made a lot of money off of water picks.
Yeah. That's the kind of world we need to get back into. People out there creating and designing, you know, and rediscovering. We should be so much further advanced as a society in our technology. I mean, it just drives me insane. When I was a kid, I used to think about when the year 2000 got here, we'd be flying around in cars, like the Jetsons. Year 2000 got here, we were still riding around in Junkers, man. I was like, I got robbed. I want the Star Trek version. You know what I mean? I mean, I love technology, you know, as long as it ain't used to spy on me or make my family sick or that kind of stuff, you know. But you got to be educated. You got to know what and how things work. If you're not sure how they work, ask somebody. Somebody out there knows. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, then we can fly around like Luke Skywalker in our land speeder, Bullseye and Womp Rats and stuff.
And if they're going to put things around with waste energy off of them, build you some sort of device inside, right next to that thing, and then put a Faraday cage around both of them, and take some of that energy. Hey, it's free. They threw it away. Don't they always say if it's out on the curb, it's mine?
I think I'm going to put not a Faraday cage, but I got a nice roll of aluminum. It used to be a sign for Valero. It's about 5 foot wide and it's about 12 foot long. I think I can roll it, or I think I can get it to where it'll roll and curl around and leave probably about a 3 or 4 foot distance or diameter around my doggone smart meter.
Well, I'll tell
That's
you what.
I mentioned.
If they force
keep the thing from transmitting towards my house, I guess personally I'm fine, but I still don't want anybody else to do it. Probably gonna stick a big old piece of metal on the wall in Mario's room as a quick fix. I want to see his headache stop going, because Mario's good people, real good people.
If they force a smart meter on me, I'm going to send a frequency down that wire to make their computers mentally ill. I know how to do it too.
Does your meter have that little wheel that goes around and around and around?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Don't tell them.
No, I ain't going to tell them. But it come out here and try to put one of those on there, I go down to my lab and I'll run a frequency down through that wire, back into that wire that'll make their computers mentally ill. I'll keep mine unplugged when I do it.
I get 1,500 watts of... I do 1,500 watts of 2 meters. That ought to do it. 19 and a half inch tall antenna and put 1,500 watts to that bad boy, set it right next to the meter.
Yep.
There's no evidence of tampering, no nothing.
Hey, I didn't do nothing.
Blow that thing. I don't know what happened.
I said Morse code down the wire to them. Their computer be having seizures and stuff. I'm sorry,
yeah,
did you say something?
Yeah, pretty plugged in. Nice message.
They better not try to put one of those on my house. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we're down to the last 9 minutes of the show, it looks like. So this is about the time we should start going around the deal, because some folks are long-winded.
I'll go last. I think I ran my mouth long enough.
Who wants to go first? What you got on your mind, anybody? Raymond? Did we lose him?
No, Raymond's there.
I had the mic turned off. I'm sorry. I had a phone call. Yeah. Yeah, the only thing I can do is to say what you said over and over again. All of you people out there, if you got an idea, come on, folks. Get up off your lazy butt. Do something about it. To experiment. You can't make a mistake. If you do something and it doesn't turn out, learn what you did wrong.
That's right.
It's not a mistake. It's a learning experience. Don't ever look at anything as a mistake unless you're just too lazy to figure out what you did wrong.
Yep. My grandpa always said, it ain't going to get done unless you do it yourself. You can't count on others.
I'm a smart man, but I've had a lot of people tell me I was smart. But what I've learned is through other people's mistakes or my own.
That's right. Better to learn off somebody else's mistake than your own.
Every
lesson has a price.
What about you, Thomas? He got his mic muted too?
Yeah. I'm just going to say the same thing I always say, man. Network.
There you go.
Other people don't withhold what you're doing from other people that are around you that might actually be able to help you, you know? So...
Yeah, and that guy next door to you might have the answer to your last piece of the puzzle, so you might want to talk to him. You might want to think about how you treat people before, you treat them, because maybe one day you might need them. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Nope.
That reminds me on your Duncan Bird there, Boomer, you're talking about you want to go to make a video until it's done. Make a video. Let people give you some input.
That's not a bad idea, Scott. In fact,
show all my mistakes.
My brother chastised me a couple of times because I put videos on where I made mistakes. And he said, why would you do that? People don't want to see you watch mistakes. And I told him, no, I've had people tell me, thank me for showing my mistakes so they didn't make the same one.
Yep.
So, yeah, you people out there that want to try something and it doesn't work, make a video of it, show it, and I will do the same thing.
Analyze it. Figure it out for them. Help them figure it out.
That's how
that
troubleshooting's
done. Yes, as I build this bird, I will make videos, put it on. Bad or good, I'm going to put them on. And if it's bad, I'm going to figure out why it's bad, my learning experience, and explain to people what I did wrong. I'm going to do that.
Cool.
I made two Axial Flux stators before, but when I did this one, and after like 4 days, I opened the cover to it, and it was still a little soupy in spots. I realized what I did wrong, but I showed it on. Man, I had a battle over that. Just me arguing at me, and man, I tell you what, I chewed my butt.
Justin, you got any words of wisdom, brother?
I made the video and showed everybody what I did wrong and all that stuff, and I scraped off what was left, mixed some hardener with it, stick it back, and pulled it out a day later, and seemed to be okay. So,
Justin, what do you got to say?
Justin, you got your mic off?
That stator's still good.
Going once. Going twice.
Justin, you got anything to add?
All right, buddy, it looks like it's you, man. I think Justin went to sleep.
I thought I heard him in the background there. You got your mic up there, Justin?
We're down.
Anyway, if you're listening and your microphone's pootered out there, I like that hat on Tesla. That's pretty sharp.
We're down to the wire, guys. 5 minutes.
Alrighty. Muddy Muddy Mudman on YouTube. Type in Muddy Muddy Mudman anywhere. You'll get it. And R-Head 100 will bring you to Raymond Head's Boomtown Laboratories. Lots of crazy things. Gravity... experiments and all that kind of stuff. He goes in detail. He over talks like me. So, with that, make mistakes. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Have a ball.
Good stuff, everybody. And thanks to all the Knights of the Round Table and all the listeners out there and people in the chat room putting in good information there. And we'll keep putting links out there and keep troubleshooting ideas. And, you know, like Raymond was saying, go ahead and make your mistakes, make your video, and that way you can show people, you know, things that, you know, they can improve on. They may have the missing piece of the puzzle. And so if everybody's out there and we're throwing these ideas to each other back and forth, you know, one guy may have a lot of talent, but many guys and gals together, there's nothing we can't accomplish, and I'm a firm believer of that. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table.
Man, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're Knights of the Round Table, three knots when we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're Knights of the Round Table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off from bad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Right.
Jesus the Terrible. All rise for the King, Shazam the Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table.